Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go. We are off and running for Friday on the Front Porch, the ninth day of March 2018. Yes, the end of the first full week of March, and ever so much, well, closer by another 21 hours than we were at the close of the program yesterday to the first day of spring. Hurrah, hurrah, hurrah. We are live and cooking on both HeadOn.live and various and sundry White Rose Society streams. That means live at FYI Nation, live at TuneIn, live at Stitcher, live on Roku. My goodness gracious, how many different ways are there to reach and get the program? All offered up free of charge. Yes, indeed. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and here in a little bit we'll get Friday on the Front Porch started. But before we do anything else, thanks go out to the partial sponsors of the program thus far. Thank you to Kathleen in Minnesota. Thank you very kindly to Khalil in Texas. And thank you very much to Brother Deacon Gerald here in almost level West by Cole, Trump, Virginia stand. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you so very much. It's our subscribers who knocked down about a quarter of the funding for each and every month, and thanks again, indeed, so very, very much. Yes, we're always looking for new subscribers. It's easy to do. It's just a matter of clicking a box over on the PayPal interface at either HeadOnRadioNetwork.com or HeadOn.live, or you could be you could join up over on the Patreon campaign, Patreon.com/Bob Kincaid. And brother Usher Steve up in New York wants to get things started this evening with a $25 challenge to get the ball rolling. He will match the first 25 bucks that come in for in the way of contributions this evening. And we got some ground to make up because we come into this final program of the first week of March 2018 down by 185 bucks from last night. So the fundraising goal this evening is $385. $385, and if someone will jump right out there and match Steve's challenge, that'll take us down to $335 to finish the week so we don't have a big old whopping hole come more in Monday. Thank you very kindly to Clarity. Heard well from Bufu, East Oregon, where the Walden Trumpansies run free. B-F-E-O-Yo. Yes, Bufu, East Oregon, yo. Thank you, Clarity. So, like I said, we've got $385 to go this evening. And, well, I don't know. I know it's going to be a very busy weekend here. There's not going to be any lounging or lolling about. I will soon be losing Agnes for another couple or 3 or 4 weeks as she heads over to help with our daughter. Neither of us, you know, relish the idea, but it can't be gotten around. So I'm going to spend some time on the road this weekend, and, that just can't be helped. I'm toying with the idea, depending on how things go. I'm toying with the idea of making a 125-mile round trip down to the just across the border into Virginia tomorrow. I made a phone call and found out they've got a nice fresh supply of Kaneka sausage, and that's as near as I can get Kaneka sausage to my neck of the woods. But again, it all depends on how things play out and work out. But I thought it might be nice to fire up the grill and just, blacken a little bit of Kaneka and, or maybe put some in a pot of beans or something like that. I'll be doing my own, I'll be cooking for one for a while. And I thought maybe a big pot of beans with some Kaneka cut up in it would be mighty, mighty fine indeed. So there we are. The fundraising goal is what the fundraising goal is. If you'd like to knock it out before we go to the front porch, that would be wonderful. I won't kid you. It would thrill me to no end to not talk about fundraising, because I loathe it, but it's what we have to do to stay on the air. Because, again, nothing's for sale here, and no one has ever been charged a penny for anything that happens here. So there it is, $385 with a $25 challenge on the table, and hopefully we'll get that started soon. As Steve points out, as far as Friday on the Front Porch is concerned, there's a ton of stuff to talk about, so it's going to be good tonight. We've managed to put a few more chairs on the porch, so I'd like to invite some new folks to come on out. I'll bring the Russian Imperial Stout and the chili. Well, that sounds what more of an invitation could you possibly want? And so, you know the drill. If you're already a contact of Sparky's in Skype, then you know what'll happen in about an hour. If you would like to, if you would like to be new to the Friday on the Front Porch conversation, well, all you got to do is send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, one word, on Skype, and he'll show you the breadcrumb trail and point you to the right quadrant of the sky for the Bob signal, although with more and more daylight now, might be a little bit harder to see. But at any rate, we'll fire up the front porch here in about 52 minutes or so. And if spring's got you down, waiting around for its arrival, may I suggest colloidal coltsfoot? Colloidal coltsfoot, an herbal remedy, unlike anything else offered by any other bullshit nutritional supplements out there in radio land. Colloidal coltsfoot. Only from the hardworking peripatetic, periodontic, periscopic scientists at Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter. Yes, colloidal coltsfoot, although it is listed as being quite toxic, well, our colloidal coltsfoot has been through a process that renders it non-toxic and good for what ails you as a spring tonic. Colloidal coltsfoot, gosh, if it's got colloidal in front of it, it's got to be good, doesn't it? Colloidal coltsfoot from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter is a proprietary blend of coltsfoot gathered by our hardworking pusillanimous periodontic peripatetic periscopic scientists at Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter, in which they dig it, they wash it, they grind it, they dry it, they freeze dry it, clean it, fold it, spindle it, mutilate it, and work it into little tiny capsules. And a 90-day supply of colloidal coltsfoot will only set you back $385, and I'll guarantee the shipping. Absolutely, I'll guarantee it. I'll guarantee it'll never get to you because it doesn't exist, because it's just another bullshit nutritional supplement like you have to have if you want to be a real, live, honest-to-goodness professional radio program. Colloidal coltsfoot. Of course, well, you already know that it's GMO-free, it's free-range, it's cruelty-free, it's vegan, it's cellulose-free, it's, oh my gracious sakes alive, it's soy-free and gluten-free, It's everything but free because, of course, it costs $385 for a 3-month supply. I've never been a big fan of coltsfoot, but thanks to colloidal coltsfoot from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter, I get all the colloidal coltsfoot I need every day in a handful of crummy little capsules. Yes, indeed, indeed, indeed. Colloidal coltsfoot. Order yours today, and we'll send you a little bundle of credulity strips where, after opening a colloidal coltsfoot capsule very carefully, you can open it and wonder why there's nothing in it, and then you can stick the little credulity strip inside the colloidal coltsfoot capsule, at which point you'll look up and go, "Hey, I've been had. This isn't going to do anything more for me than the paleo chocolate chicken bone drink or the super beets did, because they're all bullshit nutritional supplements that you buy from somebody on the radio. Try it today. Accept no substitutes. No salesman will call. Your mileage may vary. Post no bills. This side up, that side down. Use no hooks. Fold, spindle, mutilate, FOB, COD, COLT, FOOT. Colloidal coltsfoot, only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. And hey, happy day. Good news. Steve's challenge has already been met by Brian. Thank you, Brian. Thank you very, very kindly. That gets us off to a roaring start and means that we've only got another $335 to go in fundraising this evening. Thank you, Brian. Thank you very, very kindly. And Steve says one more thing. I just did a purchase utilizing Amazon Smile and named CRMW, Cold River Mountain Watch, as the beneficiary. I'd like to invite anyone who makes purchases on Amazon to go through their Smile site and name CRMW as their beneficiary, and that way have a small portion of the proceeds of your purchase go to Coal River Mountain Watch. And Coal River Mountain Watch needs all the help it can get. Because, frankly, funding for the struggle against mountaintop removal has been thoroughly out-sexied over the last few years by things like pipelines and fracking. The country has largely moved on based on the giant lie told by both sides that, you know, mountaintop removal isn't happening anymore. On the one hand, what I call our side says it because they desperately want to feel like they won a fight, and they didn't. On the other hand, the weirdos, they said there was a war on coal and that Obama had put coal out of business and the EPA, yada, yada, yada. Yeah, it's all a load of bullshit, just like the nutritional supplements, oddly enough. And the blasts are still going off. People are being poisoned. New permits are being applied for. Old permits are being expanded. And, well, the folks who live in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone have just largely been left in the dust. But the fight continues, and the fight is led by Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And hopefully when you purchase at Amazon, you know, just get a little sticky or something and put it on your computer. Smile.amazon.com, Coal River Mountain Watch. And that'll remind you the next time you order from Amazon to go through smile.amazon.com and nominate Coal River Mountain Watch as the recipient of your purchase donation. Okay? Okay. Thank you very, very kindly for those who already do, and thank you for those who yet will. Oh, well, how about that? Scott just noted, I get all the superlatives about colloidal coltsfoot, but is it Putin approved? Because, hey, looky there. It turns out that Dana Lush, from the Rifle Association, she hawks beet powder too. Yep, NRA spokesperson Dana Lush is also the face of Super Beets, a beet juice supplement. Mm-hmm.
Well, color me surprised. Not. I mean, I can't imagine anybody more loaded with credulity than, say, members of the National Ruble or Rifle Association. I'm sure that Pooty Poot has a big glass of Super Beet juice every morning. Yep. So, well, yeah. At least we admit on the front end that our supplements are all bullshit. Hey, thank you to Laurel. Thank you, Laurel, very, very kindly for knocking us down to only $325 to go in fundraising for the evening. Thank you. And speaking, well, Laurel sent a message along. Laurel says, 10 large going out to you in honor of my 47th successful orbit around the sun. I'm hella dizzy. How about you? Well, that's me on just about any given day, you know? Yeah. But speaking of Dana Lush, there's a delightful little piece of writing over at the Daily Beast. TheDailyBeast.com. It was written by a hillbilly. I follow her on Twitter. I read her stuff quite often. Her name is Linda Tirado. This piece takes far too long to read it on the air. It's much more enjoyable just to sit and read it at your leisure. But she begins, it's an open letter to Dana Lush. Dear Dana Lush, how do you sleep at night? An open letter to the NRA's top apologist. You are contemptible. You don't scare me, and neither do your sick fans. Don't piss off the hillbilly women. Don't do it. Dear Dana, I live with my family in a rural part of Appalachia. Hi, neighbor. I have two small girls, one in second grade and one who'll start school this fall. Their dad's a Marine, a combat vet. I was raised on firearms. I'm from the country. I couldn't tell you when I shot my first round. I just know that I'm most comfortable with the Ruger P89 because I get a solid double tap every time on that one, though I'll tell you I struggle with a Desert Eagle. It would be, well, we'll say, unwise to approach my house, generally speaking. If we lived in a reasonable world, I wouldn't have to make that clear, but I don't live in a reasonable world. I live in the dystopia that you, Dana Lush, fight to preserve, one in which a single crazed person can buy a military-grade weapon and come visit my house anytime he thinks I've spoken too loudly. You and I both know that happens every day in this nation. Still, somehow you sleep enough at night that you look rested on air, assuming that that's not just a genius makeup person and a lot of concealer. Ow! Maybe y'all, and this open letter does contain the word y'all, thereby guaranteeing that it does, in fact, come from the hills. Maybe y'all just have a different idea of personal worth in Missouri. I was raised in Utah. Women where I come from value honesty and truth. We honor benevolence and strength. We do not set rabid mobs on each other's children for any reason, least of all one so tawdry as a paycheck. Still, when I ponder what created you, I can't help but remember all the women I've met in Missouri. They are, for the most part, inspirational. Oh, Linda, you should meet Carol Baker. I would hate to hold a whole state responsible for how you turned out. And hey, my hometown has produced a few bitter apples. I won't hold you against the people you grew up with, either. Oh, this is so good. I may wind up reading the whole thing. Before we get into the meat of it, I should tell you that you need to get your arm tattoo covered. Despite all the warnings in the Bible about how man can twist scripture to his own use, you dared to ink a reference to the words of Paul on yourself. To be clear, I am heavily tattooed myself. It's not the ink I'm judging here, it's the blasphemy. I fundamentally can't believe that you'd look yourself in the mirror every day and tell yourself that the breastplate of righteousness and the sword of the word were meant literally. You might have tried Ephesians 4:32, which is a verse I assume you're not familiar with, but you should maybe look up, just a couple of pages ahead of that passage you're using to justify your personal profit. Or you could look at the example of Christ in the garden when he told Peter to lay down his sword. Actually, in the King James Version, which is the only version that really counts because that's the language God actually speaks, is Elizabethan English, and who wouldn't? It's lovely. Jesus says, put up thy sword into his place, thereby noting that the sword is a male. For those that would live by the sword shall die by the sword. That's what Linda Tirado is talking about there to Dana Lush. You spent some time now trying desperately to become famous, and on that account, I must congratulate you. You're a household name now. It's a certain kind of person who can find glory in infamy, but here you are thinking you're riding high. I suppose it must take a kind of talent, really, to think that tying yourself to bloody mayhem is a legacy. I've never been capable of that kind of self-deception. I envy you a little for that. Life must be a lot easier if you feel no sense of responsibility to the society you live in. Well, now, this is what you call a hiding. H-I-D-I-N-G. This is a whipping so bad it takes the hide off of her. But here's the dandy. I mean, this is the walk away. This is the mic drop. Let me answer your most recent ad quite directly. Come for me. No, really. Are you not just a shill? Do you believe the words you're happy to say, or is it just the paycheck that keeps you on air? You said my time was running out, and as far as science is concerned, your hourglass is finite. I'm waiting for you, since you issued your vague challenge. Maybe that's another difference between where we come from. In my mountains, we don't issue ultimatums we don't mean to follow up on. It would be a sign of weakness to issue an empty threat. But then, weakness is your wheelhouse. You pose with rifles for your book covers, but you hide from unarmed school children who say mean things on the internet. You blatantly lie about how hard-pressed you are. We all saw that video of you leaving the town hall while people chanted shame at you, and it's real cute that you want to cast that as people threatening you, but real talk between women from the heartland, you ain't fooling nobody. That is some genuine, bona fide hillbilly grammar right there. You ain't fooling nobody. And it just gets meaner from there. And it's delicious. I mean, this is a 200-proof takedown. And one wonders if Dana Lush will have the guts to respond, or if she'll just quiver and cower and go and cash another check at the bank for her work at the National Rifle Association. I'm guessing the latter. She's a blowhard. Oh well. But if you ever wanted to see a takedown of a bully, Linda Tirado has the goods. And what she says about issuing threats in Appalachia is absolutely correct. You don't do it around here. If somebody threatens you, they generally mean to follow through on it. And then, you know, the ball's in your court, how you handle it. So, cowgirl up, Dana. Ball's in your court. But I don't think you're going to get the drop on Linda Tirado. Meanwhile, and this is, this is sort of breaking news. Earlier today, Florida governor and Skeletor cosplay aficionado Rick Scott signed into law a Florida measure passed by both houses of the legislature, which, gasp, horror, raises the purchase limit for an AR-15, or an assault weapon, from 18 to 21. Now, the young wannabe school shooters in Florida already have to wait until their 21st birthday to buy a pistol to do that with, but they were legally okay to go ahead and buy an AR-15 or some, you know, that's not a generic term, but some variation on the theme. Legislation signed today, it also has provisions in it that permit school systems to spend shit tons of money that they didn't already have to put guns in the hands of teachers. Because that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. And guess what? It crossed my desk while I was talking about Dana Lush. Lo and behold, the National Rifle Association has already filed a federal lawsuit over the legislation that raises the age to buy guns to the age of 21. That didn't take long, did it? They had the filing fee laying around, so, you know, no worries. But the Florida legislature did that teeny tiny itsy bitsy little bit of nothing thing because they were terrified. Republicans up and down Florida have seen the actions of the Parkland students and the movement that they have already gotten going, and they realized that there was a real possibility that come November, there might not be Republican majorities in the Florida State House, in either house. And in the immortal words of Governor LePetitmaine, gentlemen, we've got to protect our phony baloney jobs. Harumph! And thus did they pass a weak and pathetic little attempt to mollify people who are tired of watching school children get slaughtered while they're trying to learn geometry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that bill, I mean, it's something. It's not much, but it's something. There's a 3-day waiting period on all gun sales, pistols, rifles, what have you. And, it arms some teachers. 3 days, huh? So now your wannabe school shooter is going to have to buy the rifle, and he's going to have to be, and look, I say he, not generically, I say he because they're almost always he's going to have to be 21 to buy the gun or to steal it from his mama or his daddy or something like that. You know, remember, Adam Lanza shot Mother Lanza and then used her doomsday prepper cache of weapons to go to Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut, and slaughter a bunch of children and teachers, adults. But if your wannabe school shooter wants to buy the gun himself, he's going to have to wait till he's 21, and then he's going to have to plunk down the money, and then he's going to have to wait 3 whole days before he can do it. It's not just 3 days. It's 3 days or until a background check can be completed, whichever is longer. If, however, you have a concealed weapons permit or a hunting license or you've completed a hunter safety program or you're a member of law enforcement or a corrections officer or a member of the United States military, well, then the waiting period doesn't apply to you. Mm-hmm. Rifles and shotguns, 21 from 18. Federal law already prohibits anyone under 21 from buying a handgun. Bump stocks are outlawed. And then the sheriff's departments in the various counties of Florida can set up what's called a guardian program. And that way, personnel from various schools can be permitted to voluntarily carry a gun on the job. But if they do so volunteer, they've got to undergo special training. And, hey, bonus, mental health and drug screening. Well, the mental health screening, I guess, is a bonus. I have yet to see many stories where somebody twists up a number and then goes and blazes. I mean, you know, I guess that would be a blazing blaze. No. And then they have to get a concealed weapons permit. Every school district in Florida then has the option of deciding whether they want to opt into the program or not. That'll be a good way to check and see just how gun-crazed any given county is, to see if they're out there marching in the streets. I want Johnny's social studies teacher to be strapping. Yeah. As Scott and Punky point out, it's something all right, but so is farting against thunder. Well, there's that too. I can't argue. Steve in New York, the NRA, America's most well-funded terrorist group, just filed a lawsuit against Florida. Yep, they did. Aren't they special? But look, they're speaking. They're speaking for the mass murderers, and here in America, mass murderers have to have a lobby voice too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the new Florida bill, you're prevented from owning, prohibited from owning or possessing a firearm if you've been adjudged mentally incompetent or you've been committed to a mental institution until a court rules otherwise. So if you're just untreated mentally ill, buy all you want. Police can petition a court for what is called a risk protection order of up to 12 months in duration to bar anyone they see fit from possessing firearms if that person is deemed dangerous because of a mental illness or violent behavior. That's an interesting concept. There's also created a mental health assistance allocation that helps schools supposedly expand psychiatric care in an on-campus setting. $400 million is appropriated in the bill. $98 million of it to harden the physical security of schools themselves. A separate $25 million has been allocated to completely demolish and rebuild the building at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, where the bulk of where all the shootings were accomplished. And, of course, yes, the NRA is suing to stop it, or as much of it, as they can. But I have a feeling they're going to run headlong into the Heller decision, which, terrible though it was, at least acknowledges that states and counties and municipalities do have the right to regulate which firearms may be owned. And in the matter of the Supreme Court, has been routinely held, like assault weapons bans in other states. Yep, sorry, that's constitutional. Goodbye. and the National Ruble Rifle Association, I don't know why that stuck in my mind that way, had to go and pound sand. So, just so we understand who the National Ruble Rifle Association are standing up for, it's the people who want to shoot up schools. And presumably the Russians who provide them with their money. Anybody know anything about guns in Russia? I don't ask this because I've got some particular hang-up with Russians. It's just that, well, why did the National Rifle Association need a liaison to the Russian Federation? There's not just a shit ton of Russian firearms being imported into the United States. There's a shit ton comes from Brazil, and a shit ton coming from Austria, and Switzerland, and Germany. Clockmakers, guns, toys, you know, they're just good at that stuff. But not so many coming from Russia that I know of. But yeah, I'm not kidding. That's how the money got passed through. And the leadership of the National Rifle Association, it took trips to Russia to meet with their Russian counterparts. Who knew that there was a National Russian Rifle Association? Maybe there's a, because we talk about them all the time here in the hills, National Russian Racehorse Association, you know, as in, I got to piss like a Russian racehorse. But is it a free fire zone in Russia? Because I'm guessing sweet, cuddly, huggable, lovable, tiger-riding, bare-chested hero of democracy, Vlad Putipoot, I'm guessing he doesn't want his political opponents carrying a whole bunch of guns. No. Mm-mm. So who knows? I don't. Yes, she did use the word double tap, Linda Tirado did, Marty. Marty noting, she's learned rule number two in Zombieland as defined by Columbus, Ohio. Meanwhile, emails rolling in. Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana, says, Dana Lush and any of these right-wingers will endorse anything as long as the check clears. That is the that's the fundamental metric on that. But, Bob, it's a slippery slope, Jeff continues. Today it's AR-15s. Next they're going to want to stop law-abiding Americans from being able to keep their rocket launchers and tanks to protect their freedom, which is spelled, by the way, F-R-E-E-D-U-M-B. Meanwhile, Steve, with a no, which is not a violation of the Bob gimmick, I might add. No, says Steve. It's just the Moscow office of the NRA, or is the NRS in Virginia the Fairfax of the NRA? It might be a distinction without a difference there, Steve. Mm-hmm. So that seemed an appropriate place to start the conversation as we move toward the end of the week. And then there's precious Marco Rubio, man of silly putty. Marco has clarified his position on firearms, sorta, kinda, maybe. Back at the town hall meeting where Rubio and his rubber spine showed up, he said, I absolutely believe that in this country, if you're 18 years of age, you should not be able to buy a rifle, and I will support a law that takes that right away. So then Rick Scott signs the bill into law today. And along comes Marco, who's had his apparently had his spine restarched. I would prefer that the new gun law not include shotguns and bolt-action rifles. But let me be clear about one thing for people who are concerned about this. It's not possession, so you can be 19 years old and use your father's rifle to go hunting. You just can't be the owner. You can't go in and buy it yourself. That's an important distinction. And then his spokesperson, Olivia Perez-Cubas, said, "It's important to remember the context of the town hall, which was about an assault weapons ban. He was using the term rifle in that regard. Bolt action and shotguns are not semi-automatic. As he said consistently, he supports raising the age, but would want to see exemptions for bolt action, shotguns, and for people who hunt." Well, I'm sure if we dug up zombie Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, she'd be all for making sure that people can have access to bolt-action rifles, because, golly, they're not nearly as dangerous as the semi-automatic ones in the hands of somebody who wants to kill another human being. Yeah. Oh, for pity's sakes. Yeah. Yeah, I don't have it. Goodbye, Marco. Too long we've known ye already. Note coming in from Lee in New York City. Hi, Lee. Maybe Putin sees a market for the Kalashnikov rifle? What's better than watching your enemy kill themselves? Selling them the instruments to do it. Hey, look, Vlad Pooty Poots, real live, honest to goodness, no kidding, running dog of capitalism. Yeah, beautiful, ain't it? Captain, it was terrible. They put guns in our children's hands. Meanwhile, let's run over to Kentucky real quick. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. I mean, you're just going to have things like this if you want to live in a free country like Merca. The greatest country in the history of the world on Earth, in the universe today, under God. Amen. Wolverines! Yeah, I mean, there's... It's tough to be a kid in Merca. Hard decisions to make. Will I take trigonometry next year? Or would I rather have that third year of Spanish? Yeah, it's not easy. And so it was that there at Frederick Douglass High School in Fayette County, Kentucky, young man sitting in class accidentally plugged himself just this morning. I remember being a kid in high school. I did something entirely different. I just cut class and went and climbed rocks and drove to the Tennessee state line and bought beer illegally and things like that when I was being a young delinquent in training. But in Kentucky, Stan, they bring daddy's freedom protector to school. Now, Fayette County Schools spokeswoman Lisa Deffendahl says the young scholar, will be charged with possessing a weapon on school property and wanton endangerment. Manny Calk is the superintendent of the Fayette County, Kentucky schools, and said they need more security measures in their schools, and from henceforward there will be metal detectors installed at the high school as quick as they can get them in there. This is something we must do, he said. Students cannot learn at high levels if they're not safe and if they don't feel safe. We're going to do everything we can to make sure that students feel safe and the teachers and staff are safe in the building as well. Can I suggest that this should not be entirely upon the school district or the Department of Education in any way, shape, form, or fashion? I know that may be just crazy talk on my part, but gosh, how about Mom, Dad, proud citizens of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, how about you make sure that your freedom protectors are locked up nice and safe and that Junior has no access to them? Is that communism? When 15-year-olds are outlawed from having guns, only 15-year-old outlaws will have guns. Fortunately, the young scholar did not kill himself or anyone else. He didn't even wound anybody else. No, he shot himself in the hand. When, wait a minute, wait for it. By God, it's another case of our dear friend Joy's, the most noted firearm incident. Oops, blam, pray. Yes, the firearm. I'll just read you the story as presented. As presented by the Associated Press. Listen carefully, because we might learn something here. The boy was in class at Frederick Douglass High School when the firearm accidentally discharged, wounding his hand. No one else was injured. When the firearm accidentally discharged. Was the trigger pulled? Squeezed? Gently? Breathe, relax, aim, sight, shoot. Isn't that it? Brass? Like I told you, I fulfilled one of my phys ed requirements in college, back when liberal arts was a thing, by taking the path of least resistance and going twice a week and shooting a .22 rifle for a semester. Hoo-ah. But yes, when the firearm accidentally discharged. Oops, blam, pray. Now, these are the kinds of questions we have to answer. Brother Deacon Asa asking, right before the young man at Frederick Douglass School plugged himself, was he solving a compound math problem as to how many beatings Frederick Douglass would take on board a train heading eastbound at 60 miles an hour? I'm asking for a friend. You're going to hell, you know that, Asa? I'm telling you, for a friend. Meanwhile, Steve in New York says, let me make this guarantee. The NRA told Marco and Governor Skeletor they could use all the anti-gun rhetoric they wanted, and the lawyers at the NRA would have their backs in the courts. Yeah, when it comes time to defend this thing, maybe we'll know how serious Governor Skeletor is about it if he hires Chris Kobach to go in and defend it. Jesus. Subject line, wanton endangerment. Scott asks, and Punky, isn't that an NRA cheer? What are you wanting? Endangerment! What are we wanting? Endangerment! When are you wanting it? Now! Well, you know what, if Dana Lush quits her day job, Scott, I mean, not saying, just saying. Meanwhile, Jeff in Hellhole, Indiana says, Bob, I've lived in Talibandiana for 48 years, but my family was smart enough to get out of southeastern Kentucky when I was 10, so it scares me when I hear you say, let's walk over here to Kentucky. I know it's not going to be good. Oops, blam, pray! But this is an interesting question. Kid's been plugged through the hand with a gun. And the question is, who's going to cover the bills? I mean, but we were told plainly in the AP story, the firearm accidentally discharged. Seems to me that would sound like it was negligently manufactured. It would be what the highfalutin corporation crippling lawyers would call a products liability case. Lawyers probably file one of those kind of cases somewhere in the United States two or three times a day because there are bad products out there that can hurt you. Here's the problem, however. If you get hurt by a negligently designed gun, hell, if you get killed by a negligently designed gun, well, if that had been a negligently designed refrigerator that killed you, or a negligently designed automobile that killed you, or a negligently designed ball peen hammer or cheese slicer, you could sue the manufacturer for the negligent production of same. If you get killed or maimed or wounded by a negligently manufactured firearm, however, well, damn it. You can't sue them. Because the Congress, some years back, passed a bill, and then it was signed into law, that said firearms manufacturers are immune to that sort of lawsuit. Yeah, all them Republicans got together and they crafted the bill, and all them Democrats and independents opposed it, except for when they didn't. That's one of those thanks Bernie moments. Bernie voted in favor of that legislation. He really did. I don't say that because I hate Bernie. I like Bernie. But Bernie, being a human being, makes mistakes, and that's one of the mistakes that Bernie made. Sorry, it's just a fact. Don't get all mad at me. And you know, that's another one of those things that if we can ever muster up the gumption to throw out the Republican majorities, getting rid of firearms manufacturer immunity would probably be a pretty good thing to do. Because then, and I freely admit it, the NRA already says it, and when a firearm is negligently designed and negligently put into the stream of commerce, well, you can sue them out of existence. Because that's kind of what the court system is for. You can sue people. Okay? Of course, since that one who was in our White House, the Kenyan Muslim usurper, left back on January the 20th, 2017, and he did so without ever taking not one single human being's guns away from him, do you know what happened? I mean, this is just a weird little moment of tying things together. Well, gun sales and ammunition sales had been up, 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 until Obama left, and then gun sales went, because, well, we're safe now. Donald Trump done promised us he's not going to MAGA our guns away from us. And now outfits like Remington are on the verge of, if not already in, bankruptcy. But you know what happens every time there's one of these shootings? Well, gosh darn it. Assault weapon sales go through the roof. Yeah, they do. They really do. I know. Who'd have thunk? So, let's face it. Those firearm sales are actually good for the NRA and the manufacturers that they represent. The Silent R. Lamar with a question. Let me say, since the gun is not the problem, then the people who buy them are, lock them up. Well, don't talk like that, Lamar. They're just patriots out there protecting freedom from the day when the jackbooted thugs of the jackbooted government and come to try to put their jackboots right down on our freedom-loving necks, right next to the tattoo that says, only God can judge me. Mm-hmm. So there you are. There we are. Here we are. We're somewhere. And the gun just went off. Hallelujah. But there's a possibility. I mean, it could happen. We might actually be able to destroy the National Rifle Association. Hell, Bob Mueller might do it for us. Wouldn't you love to see Wayne the Peter doing the perp walk? Mm-hmm. It would be a beautiful day. But in the meantime, it's something to add to the list. When Democrats get control of Congress, get rid of firearms manufacturer immunity. Put that on there because there's going to be a lot to do. Well, there you have it. Okay, that's a rational response. Laurel says, I'm still a Minnesota Vikings fan despite my team making mistakes in every big game that I can remember. I'm still a Bernie fan, too. And I didn't say anybody should not be a Bernie fan. But when you make a great big howling boner of an error like that, somewhere along the way, you kind of got to acknowledge it and try to learn from it and not make those kind of mistakes again. I mean, I think that's how the growth process is supposed to work. Mm-hmm. So here we are at 3 minutes before the hour. It is Friday on the front porch, and I don't want to eat up any of the time of the front porch conversation that we could otherwise have by blathering on the filibobster. I'll only blather for another minute or so by myself, and that is to note that, yes, we are at $325 to go in for fundraising this evening to finish this week. I really sincerely hope we can finish the first week of the first full week of March without a fundraising deficit. I really do hope we can. $325, too much ciphering involved. Let's knock this down if we humanly possibly can. And then I won't have to talk about it anymore during the front porch, because I really hate interrupting when the front porch conversation gets going real good and rousing. I hate interrupting it with this stuff. So there we are. PayPal, the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com and headon.live. And that's where we're going to do most of this. Let me know if you're sending something in so I can add it to the total and tell Boss Man Wayne to be on the lookout for it. Anyway, this is listener-supported conversation radio for a Friday on the front porch. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob.
Boat drinks, boys in the band ordered boat drinks, visitors scored on the home rink, everything seems to be wrong.
a song that wraps in Florida, firearms, cabin fever, being sick of winter and everything. Well, that, I just love Boat Drinks by Jimmy Buffett, and apparently so does Silent R. Lamar, who says thanks for the Jimmy Buffett. Well, thanks for enjoying it and being part of the family community congregation, Silent R. Lamar. Thank you very much indeed. And it is time to fire up the Friday on the Front Porch Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Again, if you've never participated in it before and you'd like to, you'd be mighty welcome therein. Just get on Skype. It's very easy. Get on Skype and pick yourself out. You do that when you sign up for Skype, so that never mind. Get on Skype. Send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk. And he'll okay it and show you and just lead you gently. You know, you have to be blindfolded and stuff. And there's the secret society organizations and the goat to ride and whatnot. But he'll lead you blindfolded into the hall. There you will see shining before you the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, at which you will promptly be seated. Hey, Sparky.
Hello. How you doing?
I'm doing good. We do have a nice glistening shine on the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, don't we?
On my roundtable, I don't really have a roundtable, but I got a big square table.
Well, no, this is the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. It's radio. We're creating an image for people. Come on, work with me.
Okay. I was just checking out one of my stepson's rocking chairs here a minute ago. We got them set up so they're looking out the front porch of the man cave.
Very nice. And how is the man cave this evening, this ninth day of March?
It's nice. We had a little bit of rain this morning. Otherwise, it's cleared up. It's in the high 60s or so. Slight breeze from the north.
Nothing to complain about then. Well, I've got a...
And I finished my demo projects here.
I've got a toasty 34 degrees and a nice woolen sweater on and a little can of gas going. So, you know, it's not terrible here, but it's no high 60s in the high Sierra by any such stretch of the imagination.
Well, I can't even see the mountain today. It's clouded over. Clouds are all over.
Is there a good snowpack on it?
I couldn't tell you that, but I mean.
Well, I mean, not today, but on days when you can see it.
A week ago, they had a beautiful, clear day. I went to town. You could see Shasta and Lassen with a fresh coat of snow on them from the night before. That's when they really looked beautiful.
Oh, yeah. It just looked like great big jagged ice cream cones in the distance. Mm-hmm. So, have you heard anything more from your little minion?
No, he hasn't bothered me since President's Day.
Well, that's a while.
Yeah, but I think he's into baseball right now and stuff.
Oh, well, yeah, batting practice.
Yeah, I mean, mom and dad, two-kid family, girl, boy. They're always doing something. Both of them are playing, you know, the girl's playing softball, the boy's playing little league. They're always going something. Then he's got two more pigs again this year.
Oh, like 4-H or something?
Yeah.
Raising some bacon.
Yeah, he made some pretty good dough last year.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think he got like 3,000 a pig.
Whoa! Yeah, put that toward the college fund. At least you kind of hope.
You cut out there a little bit.
No. Yeah, for some reason, I've noticed that. Just there are places along the way where a Skype conversation will just go and it's gone and it comes back about 10 seconds later. I don't know what it is.
It might be your internet connection.
To the extent that it's run by Frontier Communications, I'd say the odds of it being my internet connection are very, very strong.
Didn't I read somewhere that they went out on strike, too, at the same time the teachers did?
Yeah, their contract was up, and I don't think they're back yet. And, of course, you know, my gripe has never been with the CWA guys and women. I presume they've...
No, it's the management.
Yeah, because they try to get as much... They try to stretch my dollars as far as they can for themselves. And it doesn't include... the CWA folks are the people who take care of the real physical, on-the-ground, hardwired, you know. And they've got a bunch of non-union folks like running tech supports, and therefore, when I call them now, when it goes sideways, and I call them, I say, listen, let's don't go through the whole script. Let's not do the part where you ask me if I've turned my router off and turned it back on again. Let's just get a trouble ticket so I can get a union guy out here and get this thing fixed. And that makes them a little testy when I do that.
Been down that road a few times, huh?
Because that's how it always works out. Some non-union guy screws it up, and then the union guy has to come out and fix it.
You know, my cable's all non-union.
The cable companies are all that way, and that's part of the reason that I stay with Frontier, is I know that I'm supporting, I know that y'all are supporting... Everybody who keeps this program on the air are supporting good union jobs through Frontier Communications.
Yeah. Well, out here, I can't keep the internet speed for AT&T. It just ain't there over the telephone line. It's the only reason I don't have them. And then your phone costs so much. But I like the work they do because I have AT&T stock, and then I get that dividend every 3 months.
You capitalist, you.
It's only like $73.
Hey, but that's $73 you didn't have. Hey, I just noticed that, that Larry has wandered into the conversation, and given the story that we had last night... Hey, Larry, what can you tell me about Revolution Books there in Berkeley?
Revolution Books, as far as I know, and I've known about them for a long time and been on their mailing list, they are a group that promotes the all kinds of revolutionary publishers, and basically they are the public arm of Revolutionary Communist Party, that was started by Bob Avakian. And I've asked Grant any number of times, you know, Grant Gibson and other people who basically feel that Revolution Books and the Revolutionary Communist Party has the status and the the ethos or the of being a cult. They're kind of a cult group. And they are always promoting events that are taking place, films or talks by Bob Avakian. I can't spell it off the top of my head, his last name.
Well, are you aware of what happened there in the last couple of days?
I have no idea.
Well, I have no idea
what happened.
A bunch of maggots showed up. You know, make America great, morons are governing America, Trumpansy scum. And screamed at somebody there and threatened to burn the place down and said, why won't you let us in and let us read your books?
Well, I can tell you that Grant has suggested that I not really take part in that group because the FBI knows about them, and I can be watched. there are other groups that are probably a lot more thoughtful, but they had been around for a long time, and they have a bookstore in Berkeley, and I've been in it.
No, I support wholeheartedly. I wholeheartedly support their right to pretty much think and believe anything they want to, as a result of the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. And the idea that a bunch of the Trump mongrels would show up and try to intimidate them and you know, put them out of business, to the extent that they're in business. I mean, they're communists after all. Well, you know, that ain't right.
Well, they tend to be, you know, a lot of the left groups, as you know, and everyone knows on this call, they tend to, the further and further you go on the right or the left spectrum, the more and more differentiate, the minute and finite, you know, minute differentiations there are between, various policies or perceived policies. I don't think I'm making very much sense, but I'm trying. You know,
you're saying
positions.
That the political spectrum is not a geometric line that runs infinitely to the left and to the right, but that in fact, in curved space, it loops around back on itself.
Yeah, and the left tends to fight amongst itself, which is why it's not really all that strong in this country, and the right wing does pretty much the same thing the further you go out on the fringes. That's why it's so difficult to get people organized, and that's why it's really maddening, because people can argue about political things when basically they're arguing about the basically a perceived difference in how the particular group views a particular subject.
Yeah, it's all Dr. Seuss's sneeches.
Yes.
Star-bellied, yes. Sneeches and sneeches with no stars upon Mars.
That's exactly right. So that's not to say that that they don't make very good points, but I would rather be involved with an umbrella group that generally has their particular ideological perspective, rather than worrying about whether or not I'm a part of the Socialist Workers Labor Party of whatever, and Revolutionary Communist Party of this, and, you know, the Socialist Party of that. So I tend to be, I'm not that sectarian.
We could always put it another way, Larry. We could say you're not that irrational.
Yeah, well, religion tends to be like that, and any other group that you might want to imagine, because you've got Jews, you've got 8 different flavors of Judaism and 18 different versions of Protestantism. Or more, and it just gets,
yeah,
impossible.
an equally maddening number of Muslim sects, Hindu sects, and they all tend to look at each other and say, "Die heretic."
Yeah, but if you want to know about Revolutionary Communist Party, Revolution Books is the bookstore arm of the Revolutionary Communist Party, which is not to say that they don't carry other publishers. And that they don't, carry, you know, a wide variety of books for those people that are interested in left-wing dogma and left-wing practice. But their main inspiration is Bob Avakian, and I've never seen Bob Avakian.
And then the question, you know, again, like you said, because of the various flavors, you know, are these Maoists, Stalinists, Trotskyites, Leninists? And if they're all of the above, how do they possibly get along?
That's the point that I was making. So I would urge anyone with a curiosity about Revolutionary Communist Party to actually go and look up Bob Avakian and look up the Revolutionary Communist Party. Obviously, it doesn't mean to that you know, just for information, that's fine. And they do an active job of, you know, they're not out on every street corner, but because it's Berkeley, they have, what do they call those stands, those newsstands? Where
kiosks.
They put it out in front of the building, you know, it's like an easel kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, a signboard, message board, whatever.
Yes, yeah, and they have signboards, and they worry, and they...
Well, I don't mean to be dismissive or anything.
Fascism.
I just wonder if people are still sitting around muttering about, you know, Leninist or not Marxist, but, you know, more, you know, the Leninist versus Maoist versus Trotskyite versus Stalin. You know, are they still sitting around and pounding liquor and getting upset at each other about that shit?
Well, that is so 20th century to me, guys.
Well, I'm not a part of that whole trip, so to speak, but I'm sure that there are, and I'm sure that they have disagreements, which are actually pretty, like I've just mentioned before, the disagreements seem insignificant to the wider public, but to them, they're magnified.
Well, yeah. Where, see, I hear that sort of stuff, Larry, and I immediately think back to that magnificent scene in Monty Python's Life of Brian when we're the People's Front of Judea. Fuck you. We're the Judean People's Front. And it splitters, which was all a play on you know the fractious nature of left wing politics. And Rick is right. It's also 20th century. I remember, the Warren Beatty's brilliant film Reds, in which at one point the communists split off from the socialists, and then the two communist parties split, and they go off to Moscow to try to get recognition for the one that Warren Beatty's playing, Jack Reed, the one that he's behind. And Moscow tells them to go home and heal their rifts and stand together and unify. And you know what? They didn't do that. And in a way, it's sort of, and I'm in no wise compared, but it sort of translates to the Great Purity Wars of 2016. And I'm not trying to dig that zombie back up or anything, but
it's there, Bob. It's there.
Well, it is. Hi, Rick.
Hey, how's it going?
Well, I hate to keep on going about this, but you know, it's due to the fact that the Revolutionary Communist Party, very few people know about it, unless you're a connoisseur of politics. Or you just happen to be recruited, and they happen to be a fairly weak group and a fairly esoteric group that could be picked off easily. So that's why I think that this group or whatever they call that went in and made a big deal about them, they're visible enough and they're fringe enough that they can be picked off very easily. And that's what Rick is saying about it's so 20th century. Because the left is now becoming more, well, you know, it seems that a lot of young people are now joining who want to be involved with democratic socialism, not necessarily communism or straight socialism as you might think of it. They're joining the Democratic Socialists of America. And that's the major group that young people who... are concerned about perhaps promoting a plan of Bernie Sanders or someone like that. They're joining that group, and so can take it from that's about the best I can do.
Right, and if Jesus H. Marx came
my
down,
view is when you hear socialist, it's like, you know. it's like death. I mean, who wants to, who, you know, nobody in America, hardly anybody in America, you know, talk about the issues. Don't talk about like a label like that, you know? It's like, hi, I'm from the Church of Satan. How are you doing? You know, you're not going to, you know, get a lot of fans, you know, with that kind of messaging, at least in my opinion, you know, because it's got such a bad name, socialism, you know, it's just been, I mean, that was, Bernie should have said, look, I'm an FDR Democrat. That would have been much better than saying I'm a democratic socialist, you know, because then you start thinking of Sweden and Norway and all those countries, which I guess.
Well, no, but Rick, I think you overlook the fact that there is a certain amount of romance attached to the word.
Okay, maybe.
I think it's on the one hand, it's pure poison for a vast majority of the people of the United States, and anyone who doesn't recognize that really, really doesn't comprehend the nature of the country. You know, Larry used the phrase a few minutes ago of political aficionados. I was thinking more in terms of fetishists of futility. You've really got to get off on never winning anything.
Right. Yeah, exactly. The Cubs used to be.
But there was at least a remote chance that maybe the Cubs someday would win the World Series.
Yeah.
For the next 50 to 100 years or so, I mean, look, the closest socialism ever got was in the early part of the 20th century, and there were hundreds of thousands, if not millions of them, and they were easily suppressed.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
You use the phrase FDR Democrat. FDR was a master at taking things that the socialists were talking about,
mm-hmm,
and gently folding them into the body politic.
Making them palatable. Unfortunately, the country has been on. By large business interests, and before that, large corporations, mm-hmm, as it is now, or by landholders, you know, for so long that nobody can really conceive of any other way of doing, you know, of organizing social life here in this country, and yeah, that's the problem. We just can't conceive of any other way of organizing social affairs than by having a large business class, or having a large corporate class, or having a large landed gentry class dominating, or a few people dominating, or a few groups dominating a wide variety of people. And we don't have the tradition of Sweden or Finland or any of Norway or any of these other countries.
Right, and we're also very brutal and mean-spirited. And we don't give a fuck about our neighbors, okay?
That's true.
Everything in the social democracies of Europe is predicated on the notion that if everybody kicks in, everybody can have a halfway decent existence on this planet. And it's proved itself, okay? They have longer lifespans. They have higher quality of life. Generally speaking, a better time of it. Over here, though, you've got 325 million people who are absolutely convinced that they're one lucky day away from being Andrew Carnegie. And it ain't going to happen, and the income inequality only gets broader. And yet you've still got people who say, that whatever it is out there is unacceptable, and we got to do something right now. Well, what do you want to do? I don't know. But we got to do whatever it is that I don't know we need to do. By God, we've got to yell a lot and do it. Well, all righty then.
Well, if you listen to Richard Wolff,
who I listen to on a regular basis, and I know him, you know, I know him from going to see him many times to speak, and various other people, Chris Hedges and Robert Reich and any number of people that are speaking. Richard Wolff says, look, the people know in this country know that they don't like what's going on. They don't know what it is that they don't like, but they know that they don't like what's going on. So we're either going to move in one direction or the other. And I was complaining to a teacher friend of mine at school a few weeks back, and he was saying, Larry, look, what you shouldn't be concerned about what the news media are talking about. You should be concerned about your own immediate circumstances, and you should also realize that the house will not stand, and we will either move in one direction or the other. What direction we will move in, we don't know what direction that'll be, but we know that things will ultimately change. And that kind of gave me some solace, but not much.
Well, but again, I'm even a little skeptical of this idea that, you know, someday the apocalypse is going to arrive. I think the primary purpose of an empire is to fall. I think history proves that. But there's no guarantee, as my anthropology professor struggled to get across to us young students many years ago, evolution does not have any bias. Or I should say, the only bias that evolution has is toward change. Positive change, negative change, those are all subjective value judgments. And so the United States of 2018 is a dramatically different place from the United States of 1918, which was a dramatically different place from the United States of 1818. And you can extend outward from there to every other political structure and every other culture on Earth. They don't remain static, and they don't change necessarily the way people expect them or desire them to change. Does that make any sense? So
yes,
I mean, I personally think that as long as we're able to maintain the level of technology that we have, things are probably going to continue along a fairly similar trajectory. And those great tectonic shifts that people look for are relatively unlikely. Now, is there stuff out there that is going to force a dramatic rethinking? Yeah. I have no reason to doubt the science of climate change. And within 100 years, when the biggest part of the Florida Peninsula is under fucking water, people will have to change because the change will be forced upon them. But it doesn't mean that they're going to get the answer right. History is full of cultures who have gotten it wrong and wound up not yet. Look, while it's still there and people can, you know, go to Bears Ears National Monument in Utah and look at the cliff dwellings of the Anasazi.
Yeah.
Or whom I presume it was the Anasazi. Brilliant cultures. And between climate change and uncontrolled population growth, well, they're ruins now, not places where people live. Go have a look at Rapa Nui and ask yourself that age-old question, what was the guy thinking who cut down the last fucking tree? There's lots of places where I was reading a story about the use of LIDAR, which is fascinating in its own right, discovering a massive, heretofore never before seen city in the jungles of, I think, Guatemala. And the jungle, you know, they didn't just get tired. No, they plastered and fucked their way out of their civilization until the people who remained said, "Nah, sorry, we're not gonna no more pyramids. We're just gonna go and be alive somewhere and go back to what we were good at in the first place."
So, okay, well, I have a couple of questions.
I mean, I want to go into that Star Trek future, but I think we would be fools if we didn't acknowledge that there's an equal chance that we're headed toward Blade Runner future.
Well, that's exactly what this teacher was saying, who also told me a few years ago. He said, "Larry, 10 years ago," and he's on the left. He teaches art at the community college. He said, 10 years ago, the Democrats might have been able to do something to stem the tide of the progressives, or the Democrats might have been able to do something to stem the juggernaut of the Republican Party," although he didn't use that. Since we didn't act earlier, we've kind of let
the... Well, and look, the same thing applies to climate change. Had we taken science seriously in the 1970s, Larry, we would be broadly solar and wind powered now, and maybe mountaintop removal never would have been a thing. But capitalism trumps good sense, and capitalism is self-consumptive. Now, this makes me sound like maybe I'd be comfortable sitting around revolution books and, well, you know, what we need here is a good old-fashioned proletariat of the masses. That's by God.
Oh, you would have a field day.
No, I'd run screaming from the room because we're talking about people who aren't rooted in reality. Or at least my experience along those lines has been that way. I mean, I can tell the story I've told before about the guy who stood up at one of these Saving the World One Meeting at a Time meetings I used to attend, who said that his fondest wish was the deindustrialization of America. And, you know, I read that on the little post-it note up on the board, and I just walked out of the room and went and found the nearest bottle of brown liquor and got busy.
Yeah, well, the new left didn't talk about deindustrialization. They didn't talk about an anti-technological future either, you know, to either empower workers or not, or the way in which technology is employed, you know, in our society. They weren't necessarily modernization or technology or anything of the sort. So this guy, you know, I mean, I don't know where he was coming from, but.
And I mean, it was in one of those Saving the World One Meeting at a Time meetings where I first heard the term apocarev.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know what that was.
Well, that's a neologism for the apocalypse revolution. You know, there's going to be some cataclysmic event, and then we're going to have to reinvent human culture. I mean, look, think about the Georgia Guidestones. You know what those are?
I have no idea.
Okay, it's a bunch of fucking polished granite. It's three big polished granite rocks, with some basic tenets of life, written on them. And it's like a great big Rosetta Stone, that assumes that one of these days human beings are going to need those rules because everything will have gone to shit. So I mean, But let me shift gears for a moment here. We're about halfway through the program. I am proud to announce that Charlene got us down below the $300 mark. We got $295 to go. Thank you so much, Charlene. And then Steve, whom we haven't heard from in the chat room or in the round table yet, Steve has put a $20 challenge on the table to try to get us down to $265 in fundraising. Thank you very kindly, Steve, for that. So if somebody will pony up 20 bucks, Steve will, Steve from Georgistan, will then double it. Then that makes two Steves making challenges this evening. The fraternity of Steve is out in force this evening. Speaking of whom, hey, Steve.
What's going on, Bob?
It's a great day to be a West Virginian. That's what's going on.
I guess it's a great day to be from Georgia, Stan. You know, I'm not that politically up to speed today, and I apologize for that, but life gets in the way sometimes, you know, and that got me to thinking, what do you guys, what do you and Randy and Mike do when life gets in the way? You always got to have this shit blaring in one ear, even when life goes to the other.
If I can crawl up on the cross for a minute, Steve, I'll say that that's why I savor every opportunity to go and not do this. That's not to say I don't like doing this, but
you need
some clean out time. And, you know, the last time that we got even remotely close to that was Agnes and me disappearing for 13 or 14 days way too long ago.
And the way the news is flying at you, it's like drinking water through a fire hose now. I don't know how you guys do it.
Well, you know, what's that old saying, you know, being a fire, you know, the worst job in the world is being a fireman in hell.
Yeah.
Bob, where do you go for solidly reported hard news? I'm not talking about gossip news.
No, I go to the wire services first. I mean, the way I was taught to do it way, way back when I was just a little baby journalist at CNN was that you take the same story from as many wire services as you can get, and you read them and you try to cull out of them what they all seem to agree on, and that gives you a nugget of truth. Unless, of course, you're one of those people who hollers about the state-run empire media, in which case, you know, if you're not reading Glenn Greenwald, you're not getting any news.
And Bob, can I add something? You guys are doing all this pro bono, too, essentially. So if you can help out, if you're able, please help out the Horn, because Bob is the catalyst that keeps this going. Rhonda put it so eloquently the last time she called. And if you can, please help out.
Well, thank you, Steve.
That's about all I got for now.
Well, that's a mouthful. I mean, I'll tell you honestly, I watched the news today, and you know, there was a lot of talk about, I mean, what a fuck up, about how Michael Cohen used the Trump campaign email or Trump organization email to send email about the payoff to Stormy Daniels, and you know, they trotted out Sarah Hasselbeck sandbags this afternoon, who herself is standing on really, really thin, cracking ice after having admitted yesterday by accident that, sure, you know, Trump knew that the woman was being bought off, absolutely. And, you know, why do you pay off somebody who's threatening to blackmail you over something that you claim never, ever happened, huh? So the whole thing just begins to unravel. But, and there was talk about North Korea today. And then at the you know, just right before the program fired up, you know, we got news of the NRA filing a lawsuit against the state of Florida for having the unmitigated temerity of making people to make people wait 3 days before they can go and commit a school shooting. But it was really kind of a slow news day, and it actually offered an opportunity to maybe catch up on some things. And so those are few and far between lately, because, you know, whoever's doing this from our side of the ideological divide, unless they're doing something like, you know, spending their program talking about robot sex slaves or something like that, and you know, selling super beats, then you're kind of tied into being a fireman in hell.
I have all these apps, and Mercedes is in the background doing some chopping, but I have all these
chop
apps.
Chop on, Mercedes, chop on.
Bob says, hello, Mercedes. In any case, but I have all these apps, and then I have all these newspapers, Washington Post and New York Times and Wall Street Journal, and then I get these apps for UK newspapers and Australian stuff in Canada. But I stopped really paying attention to news, because to me,
it seems like it's all a bunch of gossip, and it seems like there are a bunch of people that are writing stories just to discuss the news, and there's very little out there to really explain what people can do about the news once they've read it.
Well, the one thing that bugs me the most, Larry, and Steve, I don't know if this falls into what you were talking about. I think we as a country have become seriously compromised in the ability to tell the difference between opinion and reporting. And that is that's the first and most important step to take in trying to make sure that you're not being gamed. To know the difference between reported news and published opinion. Now, a good opinion person will work with actual facts, but you're also being given a perspective as opposed to a simple reporting of the fact. And a good example of this, I had never heard of this woman before in my life. Before a few weeks ago, during the Winter Olympics, when an opinion editor at the New York Times, by the name of Barry Weiss, decided that she was going to do some USA USA, but along the way managed to slime an American family. A woman of Asian descent, who is an American citizen, and I'm sorry I can't remember her name. Well, Barry Weiss tweeted out a line from the musical Hamilton, which goes, "Immigrants, we get the job done." Okay? The only problem was the skater in question was a native-born American. But Barry Weiss just assumed that because she had an Asian appearance, that she must therefore be an immigrant. And Twitter ate her alive, but it didn't slow her down. She got fished by a fake Twitter account and wrote an entire column on the fake Twitter account, and has lately begun hand-wringing and pearl-clutching over the fact that that lefties use the word fascist too much. Word shaming the so-called left. And that's, for me, that's a good example of, and she's getting her star turn on things like Bill Maher and whatever. And look, I'm not sitting here saying, I'm not Edward R. fucking Murrow saying, "This is London," with the bombs going off behind me, okay? I do opinion, but I don't make any bones about it. I share reported stuff, and then I draw conclusions from it, and I invite conversation about it. I try to make sure that people understand the difference between the two. And especially on the right wing, but some on the left too. But especially on the right wing, if Sean Hannity, well, the right wing thinks Sean Hannity is a fucking reporter, and he's not. Sean Hannity couldn't be a reporter if his life depended on it. Sean Hannity couldn't report his way out of a wet paper bag laid on its side with the open end showing broad blue sky daylight, and all he had to do was report out of it. He couldn't do it. He's a hack. He's an ideologue. And the same with Flimball and the rest of these right-wing asshats. The White Power Barbie, the Tommy Lauren. The list goes on, and maybe I'm not supposed to say that, but anyway, whatever. It's all out there. The question is, and this is kind of where the so-called rubber meets the road, do you need to finesse the facts in order to create the opinion that you want to convey? or can you draw a conclusion from the facts as they exist without having to massage them? And therein lies the difference between what I think most of what happens on our side versus white wing broadcasting, whether it be TV or radio. And let me remind folks, because I just filibustered a little bit, I'm sorry. Steve from Georgistan does have a $20 challenge on the table. It has not yet been met. That would take us down, if that's met, that would take us down to 255. I can't do math, but it'd take us down to $255 to go. And I really, really don't want us to just get beat all to hell. Not beat up, but I mean, I'd like to not finish the week with a great big whopping deficit, because I'm trying to finish the week even, and then I can do a boatload of bill paying over the weekend and start fresh on Monday. So if Steve's challenge could be met, that would be huge. And then we'll take 255 and see if we can take further bites out of it that way. Got a note here from Scott and Punky. Fringe left ideologues. For an appreciation of how several movements in the UK came and went in the 1970s, 80s, check out the three-part BBC series Lefties. It's quite informative, and it's available on YouTube. It makes for great weekend viewing. P.S. The roundtable today is not unlike inviting a cross-eyed javelin thrower to a picnic. He's not really expected to win any medals during the games portion of the day, but he does manage to keep the attention of the crowd. Sigh. I remember when straight-ahead journalism also did that. Well, yeah. But that's a good line. Okay. But I'll probably get...
Hey, I've got a quandary, guys.
Oh no. A million units of penicillin administered in the gluteus maximus will also often clear up that quandary, Rick.
No, that's not it. I got passes to the Arroyo Seco Festival coming up late June near the Rose Bowl.
Oh,
okay,
no,
the
who's
golf
playing?
Course adjacent to the Rose Bowl. Oh, who's not playing? First day is Saturday, the 23rd of June. Neil Young, Promise of the Real, and Jack White are the lead acts. Or I guess they're the final acts, I guess, at the end of the night. And then they're also the Pretenders are playing. Bell and Sebastian, I've not heard of that. Kamasi Washington, The Specials, Sue George, S-E-U, Suey George.
Wait, The Shaky. Specials?
The Specials are playing. Yeah, are they good? They're good?
I'm trying. Yeah. My God. I'm trying to remember what they
Grapes?
Even what their hit was.
Rick.
Yeah.
Seo Georgi.
Oh, Seo Georgi. There you go. I knew I mangled that.
Is a British act, Afro British.
Oh, okay.
Belle and Sebastian are kind of they kind of came out of the 90s movement that spawned groups like the Tindersticks and groups like that. Kamasi Washington is a jazz player that plays saxophone.
That sounds
good.
He
has now a second album, and I don't know who else you. Jack White obviously is from White Stripes.
Right.
I don't know who else is playing.
Yeah, well, the Specials are a ska band that goes all the way back to the late 70s in the UK.
Oh, I like that. Right. They're from Britain, right? Aren't they? The UK.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
exactly
right.
I like those guys. I forgot about them. They're good. And then the Milk Carton Kids, I have no idea who those folks are. Margot Price, Hooray for the Riff Raff, North Mississippi All-Stars.
Oh, no, they'll be fun.
That's what I heard.
They'll be good.
Somebody in my office was saying that's their favorite band. It's like, what? Never heard of them. And then Gomez is playing. Dwight Twilley, Sanders. Huh?
Dwight Twilley?
Dwight Twilley, yeah.
I don't hear any real risks in there of you using your powers for evil.
Well, I'm trying to find some. Pharoah Sanders, Typhoon.
Okay. I'm just not gonna take you seriously anymore,
Maxim
Rick.
Maxim Ludwig.
No, Rick, I'm sorry. I'm just not gonna take you seriously anymore until you send a photograph of yourself holding tickets to a Ted Nugent concert. Okay, that's just how it is.
Well, actually, I saw that Ted Nugent's going to be coming.
Or Kid Rock.
I think Ted is coming to L.A. somewhere, like maybe even in May or June. But what I'd like to do is take up a collection to send Rick there to use his magical powers. What do you think, y'all?
Hey, good news. Thanks, Kay. Kay jumped in on Steve's challenge to knock that down. Ralps jumped in. Thank you very kindly, Ralps. Let me make sure I'm keeping up with everything here. So that I can know where we stand.
So
that means we.
I'll get to that in a second here.
We're at $230 to go. We've got a fighting chance of crossing under $100, and that would be awesome.
Okay, let's do a Royal Seco weekend concert challenge. Okay.
Okay.
I'll throw in 20, and I'll double it if it's matched by somebody. Okay.
Okay,
so
that's awesome.
That'll be a total of 40.
Okay, so that's really super duper awesome. So, you got 20 on the table. If it gets matched, then you throw in another 20. That would take us down below $200. That would take us to 170. And by the way, Steve in New York, who says he will join us shortly, says, "I'll kick in another $5 toward it if new folks put up the 20." But well, that's too late for that. I'm sorry, I was a little slow on the draw there. But thank you, Steve. And hey, Gary, thank you very kindly, Gary. Gary just answered your challenge. So actually met your full challenge. So that means that we are. Let's see, math sucks. We're at 140 to go. We got $140 to go, which is freaking awesome.
Sorry, guys, I had to mute there because someone in my office just came in and I took care of it. So, how's the challenge coming, Bob?
No, the challenge got met, and actually, your whole 40 got met, and it got raised by $10. So we've got $140 to go in fundraising. Thank you, Gary.
God.
Thank you very kindly.
There you go. Friday afternoon miracle or whatever.
Okay,
miracle.
So now we're $140, and Steve has said he'll kick in another 10, but only if it comes from a new person who has never contributed before.
Okay.
So there's a newbie, and that's easy. That's a newbie $10 challenge, or not newbie, but you know, never kicked in before. That $10 will be doubled by Steve in New York. So that's freaking awesome. Let's see here. There's only one person we haven't heard from so far. Clarity has been waiting. Hey, Clarity. I hope I didn't drop out or something.
Had to unmute.
Oh, there she is. Yeah, see, I never have to worry about that because I've just got a little red button right in front of me on a mix desk that says unmute. And mute, and so you know, I just push the button, and sometimes Skype just knocks me out anyway. Welcome.
And I had to wear Toto the dog down because she's just got too much energy, and you know what she sounds like on the floor. So
she's a skater.
Yes, exactly. I wanted to just talk about a little thing that happened to me. Our regular first Thursday gig, they got. I don't know what to call it, a checkup from the royalty or what, BMI, one of those two. And they're basically just trying to end live music in the clubs, you know. One place we played a couple years ago, we had to submit a set list before we played, and then they went through and told us, oh, you can't play this tune, you can't play this tune, you can't play this tune, or we had to pay royalties to the writers of the songs. And it's just a mom and pop joint. And, it's just, it's prohibitive what they, you know, expect for them to pay. You know, some of the corporations like Red Lion and stuff like that, they have live music. You know, they have cabaret license and they're all, you know, corporate stuff. But the local people, they can't afford to pay that kind of overhead to have live music once a month. So I don't know what we're going to do. We may have to go to a restricted set list to keep things going. But, God, it's just... And then the place over in Pendleton, just, you know, on the other side of the county, they used to be the place where, you know, bands would stop through on their way from Boise to Portland and play. And they quit having live music because the same thing happened to them. So I don't know if it's just, you know, the death of live music as we know it, or
you know, I'm not so sure about the death of live music. I think what's going on is groups are looking for alternative revenue streams because they're not able to sell their, you know, their albums and their, you know, CDs and so forth, and their, you know, what, your online tracks, because the, you know, people are pirating and they're not buying the shit. And so the only way they can make money is by touring. And if other groups are playing their music and they're not getting paid for it, then they just don't make money. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
Does that make sense?
I do understand. I had a friend that had to, he almost, you know, got charged with infringement, not just, you know, because he recorded his own tracks of stuff and put it on his MIDI. You know, so he could just click into a track and play, you know, before there were MP3s or anything. And this guy came in one night and he said, no, you can't do that because all these songs are licensed, and for you to record them without permission is a violation. So, yeah, it's been going on a long time, and I understand the business end of it. I had a copyright dispute with a job I had after I was fired. They continued to use the music that I'd written, and they claimed it was a work for hire. And I said, no, it was something I did when I was off the clock, and you paying for it. And I won the case, but I don't have any royalties coming from that either.
Well, you just got a cease and desist order there, finalized, we'll call it. You stood up for yourself, but yeah, it's, you know, it's always been hard to be an artist, as you know, Clarity, yeah. And it's probably gotten even harder with the current economics of music, you know?
Yeah, the money that we used to spend on records, they're spending on their cell phones, their smartphones.
You know, or they're going to concerts. I mean, bigger name concerts, let's say, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Well, bigger name concerts, the price of the ticket is prohibitive. Rick,
yeah, well, yeah, it really is. I mean, I bought these tickets against my better judgment only because, you know, figured I can go. Yeah, what's that?
You're middle class, Rick.
Yeah, I know.
Us are working poor folks, right, Bob?
Well, I don't know if I'd quite put myself. Well, you know, I got more debt than I'd like. Let's just say.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, and I don't think Rick's running around in the Maybach.
No.
I mean, if he had the highfalutin lawyer dollars, Gulfstream 5, I'm sure he would have offered to fly me out to, you know, L.A. for a shrimp taco with him and Tracy.
Oh, hell yeah! I'd fly out for lunch, Bob. No,
well, that's
problem.
Upper middle class.
Upper middle? No, I don't think so. That's that's the reach. That's definitely the reach. Hey, check this out. The second day is, I think, even better. Okay, the headline acts are Kings of Leon and Robert Plant and the Sensational Shapeshifters. He and his band are playing at the Orpheum, and for the cost of one day of the ticket, which is like, I think, I don't know, it's 150 or so, I would have to pay like 350 just to get a crappy seat at this 2,000 seat stadium, the Orpheum. Whereas if I play my cards right and I park at the right spot at the right time on the right stage and just kind of stay planted there, and wait for Plant to show up, I'm good as gold. I can get real close.
Wait,
you know?
planted for Plant?
Do I get a cowbell? I wasn't even trying that.
Kind of a low rent weak need kind of cowbell, but yeah.
I know. So the second level of the bands then is Gary Clark Jr., who is just tremendous. I don't know if anybody you've seen him, but he played with Clapton like not that long ago, and I saw them at the Forum. And then Alanis Morissette is playing, Third Eye Blind, The Violent Femmes, Capital Cities, The Bangles, The Revolution. I'm not sure what that is. Trampled by Turtles, Aaron Neville, who's pretty good. Los Lobos, they're fun. Alan Stone, Dorothy, Irma Thomas, Fantastic, Negrito, Tracksuit Wedding, and Margaret Glaspie. So I just hope it's not 100 degrees on the second day like it was last year. I didn't go last year the second day. I went the first day when it was like 80 degrees, and it went up to like 100 in just one day. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. My budget's blown, though, for a while, but, you know, what the hell, right?
Is there a Sunday, Rick?
Yeah, that's the Sunday that I just talked about.
Okay, so it's Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, Saturday and Sunday, yeah. Yeah.
Well, Robert Plant now is now part of a new Vogue. He's being played on Alternative and also on Americana stations.
Oh, really?
Heavily.
That's interesting.
It's interesting. Irma Thomas, I wonder if that's the same Irma Thomas who's from New Orleans.
Probably is.
A soul singer.
Probably is.
But that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Some of those bands I don't know about, but more often than not, I do. I know about these bands.
Yeah.
I haven't heard a lot of them, but I know about them.
Yeah, I think the second day is better, but the first day is good too, because I've never seen the Pretenders. I want to see them. I'd like to see Jack White. The Specials would be good.
Well, the cool thing about seeing the Pretenders is you can sit there and watch the Pretenders and think about Mr. Stress coming near to beating the living hell out of Chrissy Hynde.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Not because Bill was an abusive guy, but because she was behaving like a pretty rotten human being.
Yeah. Well, you know, told him that
his dear sister dying of ovarian cancer didn't really have it.
Oh God.
And
I remember him getting really worked up about that for good reason.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that wasn't cool.
And she even put it into a song at one point. It's in one of her songs.
Oh, geez. Somebody dying of cancer or something? Is that it?
No. It's about I got to find the lyric now.
Yes, you do, Bob.
How are you doing, Rick?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. My sister's in town, or actually she's in San Diego. I've got to get this damn brief done and then get it in the mail. And then I'm going to go down and leave early tomorrow morning, and I don't know where I'm staying yet. I got to find a place to stay tomorrow night.
well, let me know when you're coming to San Francisco, if you do.
I am. Actually, Larry, I think I told you I have a trial, maybe a 1.5-day trial I'm taking over for a friend of mine who's like 80 years old, and let's say he has a heart issue that doesn't allow him to get too worked up and get too stressed out, so he's having me try the case for him. That's like at the end of May, so that should be fun. I'm probably going to make it a weekend with, I'll probably bring Star with me. And, you know, she's going down to San Diego with me and my son.
Well,
and my sister and her family are going to be there. And I've got a brother down in San Diego, so we might go to his compound in East County, way out in the middle of nowhere. I'm sure it's maggot country. I'm sure it is maggot country. But, it should be fun.
Yeah, hopefully I'll be able to see you for a little while.
Yeah. And, I'm trying the case in the San Francisco Superior Court. So
Steve, where do you usually go for your news? I don't know if he's on, but
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah. Yes, friend. I get alerts. All my Google alerts. I'm usually in front of this computer all day because I work at home, so I get alerts that pop up on Google. Anything politically related is typically where I go, and yeah. I have MSNBC blaring in the background, so that's coming on, you know, on the left side. So it's in front of me and coming from at me from the side of me, if that makes sense.
That's cool.
Yeah, I wish we had more. I wish I had more outlets to where not only where I could hear music, but where I could find out that, you know, I mean stuff that you can only get the music or hear the music that the record companies are willing to put out. But I'm sure that there are a lot of ways to get music, you know, in other ways. I just don't know where to go to find it. And I don't know where the general public would go to find stuff that is innovative or that is trying to do something different or new or whatever. I'd like to have more music, more, you know, on the radio.
Yeah, well, the thing, you know, I found this really cool station. It's called Acid Flashback Radio. Y'all have to check it out. They play a really eclectic, you know, sound, you know, music from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, even contemporary. It's really good. It's patterned after, I think, is it WBIX of New York, a former station in New York, or, you know, anyway, there's like kind of a little thing about a blurb about it when you go on the site, but it's called Acid Flashback. You will not be disappointed. You will like this music. It is probably the best. No, it's good stuff. No commercials. Commercial free.
Okay, quick update on the. I went and found the lyric.
Oh.
And it's the first song on the first Pretenders album, and it's called Precious.
Okay.
And it's a real hard driving thing. It's a great song.
It is a good song.
And apparently it's kind of a, you know, it's she's not sneering at Bill or anything. It's in a way, it's kind of the song itself is sort of a middle finger to Cleveland.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah.
She says, I was feeling kind of ethereal because I'm precious. I had my eye on your imperial. You're so precious. Now Howard the Duck and Mr. Stress both stayed trapped in a world that they never made. But not me, baby. I'm too precious. I had to fuck off.
Mr. Stress is specifically referred to. That's wild.
Yeah.
I think I remember him telling that story about the lyrics.
But they were both pretty tough damn characters back in the day, and she pissed
Chrissy,
him right
Chrissy
off.
And Bill. Chrissy yeah. and Bill, you mean?
Yeah. Chrissy yeah, and they Bill? Moved. They moved in the same circles.
Who the hell is Duck?
Referred
to in that.
Yeah, Howard the Duck.
Oh.
Well, I mean, first it was a, you know, it's a Marvel comic, but okay. that refers to a specific, I can't remember who it referred, but it refers to a specific Cleveland area musician. And,
well, I think it's a jazz guy too, maybe.
And
yeah.
And you know, Bill
blues guy.
Bill had a very close chance to get out. But as he recounted to us years ago, he couldn't play the record label games.
Yeah.
And so he stayed. Yeah. But you know, and what she means by using the phrase "fuck off" is, it's not that you know it's not no I had you know I'm going to fuck off on out of here.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. You know what I'm holding right now in my hands. I got to show this to you guys, okay? I'll make an exception for me. This is the Stress Relief fundraising multi-CD, like four CDs.
You're gonna have to put it in front of the camera.
Yeah, let's see here. Where the hell is it? Is this it here? There we go.
There it is. Yep.
Stress Relief. There you go. See?
Awesome.
That's Bill. May he live forever wherever he is.
Well, he does through his art.
He does. So there you go.
And I've got further good news to relate. Matt has taken us down to Matt has taken us down to $70 to go. And then as a show of solidarity, Maurice jumped in as a brand new a brand new contributor and took it down to 69. Thanks, Maurice. Thank you so very much, and thank you to Matt in San Francisco. So, hey, magic number. We've got $69 to go.
Is that Mighty Mike? I see.
Mighty Mouse.
Mighty Mouse.
Mighty
yeah.
Mouse. I mean, yeah. Mighty Mouse. Yeah.
Oh. I'm here. I'm just feeding cats. Not hurting them. I've already done that. I'm feeding them now.
Oh, God, Mighty.
Yeah, no, yeah, herding. Yeah, H-E-R-D, not H-U-R-T. Yes.
Yes. God, it must be a year since we've talked, Mike.
Well, somebody dropped my name, so I figured I couldn't let that go unrewarded.
Awesome.
All y'all.
Yeah, well... I hope you're doing well. I haven't heard from you. Well, you know, so.
No news is good news, as my old man used to say.
Okay.
Can I make some recommendations for listening?
Yeah.
Okay, on Saturday night, there's two programs I listen to. One is Saturday Night Blues on CBC Radio, and he plays some great cuts. And the other one is on KALW in San Francisco. And it's called Tangents. And he plays a very eclectic mix of new stuff, European cuts and stuff. Guy's a great musicologist. And another station that you may not have heard of is Portland, KBOO.FM. And they have a great program on Sunday night called Woman's Soul, and it's all women artists. So any of those three, I think you'd get some good sounds out of and kind of stretch your ears a bit.
No, those both sound good.
Yeah, yeah. But the Saturday Night Blues is classic blues, good stuff.
Yeah, that's Canadian broadcasting?
Yeah, CBC, yeah. And it's on Radio 1 and Radio 2.
Okay.
Yeah, KPOO is community radio. KPOO, KBOO. Yeah, and then the KLW is a much better run...
public
kind of version of between KQED in San Francisco and KPFA, and they run NPR programs, but they also do their own homegrown public affairs, KALW.
Yes.
Not KALX. That's the UC Berkeley station that I used to volunteer at, but KALW, San Francisco, 91.7.
Yeah.
Okay? Thank you.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
All right.
Oh, by the way, I just got a note from Robert in Australia. I just received an alert that the TPP was signed overnight. You know, we bailed out of it, but it's been moving forward without us. Chevron could sue the Australian government. While you were sleeping, leaders across the globe signed on to the TPP, the dangerous deal that entrenches corporate power over democratically elected governments. Currently, the government can outlaw products deemed dangerous to protect the Australian public. But under the ISDS clauses, with the TPP in place, manufacturers could sue our government for banning their dodgy products. It's already happened in Canada 22 times. Robert in Australia says, I'm getting depressed again. But Robert, I will add, I mean, and, you know, this cold comfort. You're depressed in Australia.
You guys don't have like an orange marmalade in charge of your
country. You've just got Malcolm Turnbull, who's just a goofy little, well, not goofy, but an ill-meaning little right-wing twit. But you've also got a fighting chance of getting rid of him at some point in time, someday. So keep the faith, Robert. Keep the faith.
So Bob, I wanted to know, Do parliamentary systems have the same problem with gerrymandering that we have with our two-party system?
I really don't know. Now, if you look at the UK system, maybe it's been reformed since.
Uh-huh.
But one of the things that I always thought was strange about the UK system was that you could stand, you know, they stand, they don't run. They stand for election, they don't run.
Right, right.
But you can stand for election in a district or seat or whatever you call them, and listeners in the UK can tell me if it's still this way or not, and not live anywhere near it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've heard that, actually. Yeah.
There's, for instance, if you follow the career of Winston Churchill, you know, he'd stand for this and stand for that, and had only the meagerest connection to the actual people he was hoping to represent.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't know. I don't know. Let me go back for a minute, though. You've got competition for best concert tickets right now, though.
I do.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Pray tell.
I had a note, and this is so cool. I had a note from Chris in Germany.
Oh.
Come June, she's going to go see the Stones in Germany.
Oh my God. Okay. She's got me beat then.
Yeah. You're
the best fucking rock and roll band of all time. Live band. They are so good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and.
Well, enjoy it, Chris.
I know she will. I know she will. And God, that's going to be a humongous, you got to figure that's going to be a humongous crowd.
Is it in Berlin?
I don't know.
Huh.
And I'm assuming it's in Germany. For all I know, it might, you know.
Probably Berlin. They have a lot of good concerts, I think.
Long live the Queen. And the thing to be noted is that there's no line of succession to the Stones.
No.
You know, you're absolutely, Mighty Mouse, you're absolutely right. But then again, I think that kind of rock and roll is largely dead. I hate to say it.
Well, it's still alive as long as they are.
Right, and you know,
are,
and,
maybe,
and as long
maybe that's the point.
You know, as long as the Who's out there, and as long as you know, as long as Jimmy Page can still grind out a few licks. But I mean, there's difference. That's not to say nobody's doing good music, but that brand or that style. And, you know, in many ways, they had it not been for the massive influence of the record companies and the record labels. And I mean, that whole era, that is just dead. OK,
well,
now it's tour or die.
Well, of course. But I think like Mick Jagger is the Jack LaLanne of our generation.
Well, then
that's
what is that
comparison, Mike?
That is a great comparison. But what does that make Keith?
How many push-ups can Mick do in airports? You remember that? LaLanne was like 95 and was doing like 100 push-ups.
Oh yeah, pull a boat across the English Channel by his teeth. I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, maybe so. Who knows? That guy was bionic.
Well, we gotta take what we can get.
But Keith is my hero.
Keith is a different sort of. He's got certain alien properties that a lot of these folks are great artists and brilliant people do. There's kind of no explaining Keith Richards. You know, he gives drugs a good name.
He's in some strange ways, he's kind of like an everyman. What do you all think about that?
Yeah, it's like hard living. Sometimes it's a discipline.
Yeah, there you go. Like me, I just had an all-nighter.
Well, speaking of the Stones, I just had a note from Renee, who said, "It's good hearing that Irma Thomas still performs. The recording of her covering Time Is On My Side sounds like she's conducting church and, in my opinion, leaves the Rolling Stones version way in the dust. Both were done in 1964. Her version is worth a listen and utterly unforgettable." Okay, so I know I've got something to do after the program.
I've got her circled on my program, on my concert program. Thank you for the tip there.
Yeah, Irma Thomas version of Time Is On My Side.
Okay, cool.
Hey, speaking of things unlooked for, I've been bragging a little bit about watching Babylon Berlin. on Netflix. Agnes and I are just enjoying the heck out of it. Yeah, good, you know, good detective story. Like I said, beautiful production values, great acting. And so last night, the episode we watched, there was a scene that takes place in a like an Art Nouveau club, disco, whatever, 1929 Berlin. And the singer up on the stage was Brian Ferry. You know, Roxy Music. Did I just drop out or did you guys?
Yeah. What show was that, Bob? I'm sorry.
Babylon Berlin.
Yeah.
And
that would make sense.
Because earlier I had noticed that the soundtrack, because it's all jazz age music, and the theme song is just freaking darkly awesome. Earlier I'd noticed that there was a jazz era, jazz age version of Roxy Music's or Brian Ferry's Dance Away. You know, Dance Away, the Heartache. And because I looked at Agnes, I went, wait a minute.
He did an entire album of Roxy songs as Jazz Age with Fidelity, you know, Jazz Age Fidelity and all that, which was interesting.
Well, it made me wonder if is that one of his or is that I'm going to look here and see who wrote it. Maybe it started out as a... No, he wrote it, and it just got turned into... it got turned into a Jazz Age song. So that's cool.
Well, he worked a lot with Robert Fripp back in the 70s, if memory serves me correctly.
I know that in the earliest incarnation of Roxy Music, Brian Eno was there for like one or two albums.
Yep,
and then went off on his own.
Yeah, "Dance Away" was a song on the album Manifesto, which came out in '79 after their long break that they took after that album Siren.
Yeah,
and they took a long break, and "Dance Away" was one of the songs on it.
And okay, trivia: isn't the model on the cover of Siren the blue painted woman? Isn't that Jerry Hall?
Yeah.
Who left Brian Ferry for Mick Jagger? Yeah.
Yes.
Rock and roll gossip.
By the way, the latest Rolling Stones record, if you like the blues, they went back to doing blues. So if you like that,
yeah,
that's really...
I saw an interview with Keith where he said he kind of had to arm twist the band to get him to do it. By the way, note coming in from Dan. Most Saturday evenings, I listen to Tangents. Every week, Dor Stein, the genius behind the program, has a contest. Guess the musician. The winner gets free tickets to any show he can get you into. I won the contest once last year. Tonight, we're seeing Omar Sosa, the Cuban pianist. Wow, cool. So Tangents is another good music option. As far as radio is concerned and your complaints about what gets played, Larry, note coming in from Scott and Punky, radio note for Larry, please mention that the documentary Corporate FM is on Amazon Prime. It's a good explication of what a mess was made of radio by the consolidation of all the stations. Which is actually a good segue. We're 69 bucks from getting finished this evening. I'm not going to segue because Steve from New York has found his way into the room. Hey, Steve.
Hey there. Sorry I came a little late tonight. And I have to tell you guys, Socially, like with what you guys are talking about, I'm probably the least sophisticated person you've ever known in your entire life. It probably has something to do with my extremely right-wing tendencies when I was in high school and whatnot, where I didn't want to have anything to do with all this hippie music and stuff. My nickname was Three Steps to the Right of Attila. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. So I don't know anything about a lot of this stuff.
Does that make you Genghis Khan, if you're three steps to the right of Attila, Steve?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not. I don't know what the hell I am.
No, it makes anymore. it makes him the bastard love child of Woody Hayes.
Oh my God! A cowbell for yourself, Bob.
Yeah.
Is that acceptable, Steve?
Yes. Yeah. But the thing is, Woody never punched me in the throat. So.
Oh jeez. Yeah, that was against Clemson.
Clemson in the Orange Bowl.
Yeah. Jeez.
Oh, no. Peach Bowl.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's Peach stupid. Lost his job over the damn Peach Bowl. Jeez.
Yeah. Well, that's Woody.
Yeah.
I don't begrudge him punching the kid on the other team for intercepting. Them's the breaks when you intercept against Woody Hayes.
Don't do it. Drop the ball. That's the safe approach. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. He had it coming to him.
He did. You have to understand something, Rick. I still have kind of a right wing streak in me.
Uh-huh.
Which has led me to my profession of being a libertarian socialist, so and a modified monarchist. So
okay.
Yeah. That's why I always feel like
we have to have people with different perspectives. I mean, too often we can be very intolerant of other people and differences of opinion and, you know, ways of thinking and so forth. And we need to kind of, you know, understand each other and listen to each other instead of just always talking, you know?
No, I hear you, but I'm actually of the opinion, and a lot of this has to go with experience, and I actually worked on Capitol Hill for a year back in my days when I was a little right-winger. I don't think all opinions are equally valid, and I frankly think some opinions are just wrong.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I feel like I'm kind of crashing the party here. You guys had such a good conversation.
Oh, no. You're not.
What's going on, man? What are you up to?
Lots of stuff. Lots of stuff with the law practice. Most of it good, some of it not so good. But, you know, things are moving forward up here. Which I'm very happy about. You know, it's interesting. I listen to Larry a lot on the Richard Wolff stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, Sam Cedar had interviewed Professor Wolff a couple of days ago. And.
Richard Wolff?
Yeah. I can't stand the guy because I find most of what he talks about so pie in the sky.
Yeah, he is somewhat of a one-trick pony, I think.
Well, I don't even know that it's a one-trick pony. I think in concept it sounds great, but who's going to pay for all these employees to buy their companies? I think I have a certain pragmatism about me, and I find that Bob has a certain pragmatism about him too.
Yeah,
I don't mean to speak for you, Bob, but that's kind of
pragmatism during the Great Purity Wars of 2016, and I contributed to this problem, became a dirty word. But in the end, you cannot whatever change you seek to effect, you cannot accomplish unless you have anybody?
Power.
Bob, I'd like to rename the Purity Wars as the Purity.
Well, you dropped out on me there. What do you want to rename them as?
The Punic Purity War. The wars between Carthage and Rome. thought you might appreciate that as a student of history.
Yeah, oh, the classic, yeah, it, right. I rooted for the Punics. No, I'm kidding.
I was on the sparkle fart side.
But to the extent that it wound up absolutely changing the victor and with the utter destruction of the loser, yeah. Yeah, I'll buy into that, but I mean, you understand why I refer to it as I do, that, you know, the great purity wars of 2016.
Yeah. Brought up Trump.
Because it was waged, and you know, fuck all what happened over on the right-wing side. It was waged on our side by a bunch of people who were absolutely certain all the way down to the toenails of their soul that they were pure and they were right, and their commitment to their correctness wound up doing a level of harm that, you know, that we firemen in hell are still sorting out.
Well, you at least have full employment as a fireman in hell, Bob. That's the good thing about that.
Well, yeah, I don't know if you probably remember, Bob, that I was inclined to be one of those purity people, and then I remember, I don't know if I emailed you or had the conversation, but what saved, or not saved, what changed me was, you know, dare I say it, the pragmatic and practical, I didn't want you to lose your health care.
Yeah, and I wound up losing it anyway, and it didn't have anything to do with Trump, but, you know.
But you know exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I ended up losing mine, at least for a while, too. Probably not because of Trump, but neither you nor I would be in this position had we voted for had the devil actually become president. Anybody who tells me and looks me in the eye and says, "Oh, there's no difference," after I punch them in the face and kick them in the head, I walk away and say, "Yeah, right. Take a look and tell me."
Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm coming from.
No, I mean,
come to be a Machiavellian when it comes to politics. I don't give, I am almost to the point, I'm not almost. I am an ends justifies the means person.
Well, being a Machiavellian is that.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, look, I mean, here's the reality. I am very fortunate in that I'm going to be able to pay next week. Again, you know, no insurance, no health coverage. Don't tax the horn community for your health care, Bob. You die instead. No, next week I'm going to have to lay out something on the order of, you know, $400 for doctor's appointments. And you know, that's just to get seen. That's not the whole bill.
Of course.
And you know, I mean, that's the damn reality. If I'm gonna keep being able to sit here, I gotta go. I got to get the scripts rewritten. I got to get the cheap blood work done to make sure that, you know, nothing is rotting on the inside. And cross my fingers. And frankly, you know, there's another thing that's running in my background. It's not me. It's a member of my family. Where insurance played a big part in something that has become a health crisis. And there's no way around it. It was a procedure that badly needed to be done and was not done because the doctor said that she was unwilling to lift a finger to pre-certify the procedure. And frankly, she wouldn't have been paid enough under Medicaid. And it has led to a very, very serious medical situation for a member of my family. And it's creating no small amount of stress here. And so and now we've got the convoluted explanations about the the monies that are going to be used to pay for the teacher pay raise, which I wholly support. But they're saying, well, you know, it's not really coming out of Medicaid. It's coming out of the healthy Medicaid fund. And we promise we're going to put the money back.
And, of course, Jim Justice is definitely worth his word.
Jeez. Kunta Kinte Justice.
Jim Kunta Kinte Justice. Sometimes I ask God, why did you make me Jim Justice? And God says to me, Jim Justice, I made you Jim Justice instead of Kunta Kinte because I wanted you to be rich. And I wanted you to do rich things, good things for people with your riches. Apparently, that does not include paying his coal company's fucking income taxes or property taxes or any taxes.
Yeah. Well, he's a job creator, Bob. He can't pay taxes, right?
Well, right, because then he can't be creating them jobs. By the way, going back to a previous topic, I just heard from Bill in Allentown, who gives a big thumbs up to what Renee said. Irma Thomas does leave the Stones version in the dust. I looked it up while you were talking about it. Irma's voice is much better than Mick's voice. I'm better off knowing this. Another black artist's music that was stolen by white guys who thought that they deserved it more. Yeah.
So rare.
Early history of the British invasion. Yeah.
I have a question. Is Clarity still on the call? I don't see.
Yeah, she's here.
Okay. I just had to say something. I think Clarity is one of the best contributors to the Horn. Every time she talks, I just love hearing her talk because there's a depth of knowledge. Even tell you the depth of knowledge she has reminds that there's this real depth of knowledge about stuff that you just don't get from other people. And I just think I love listening to her. She's freaking awesome, and I just wanted to make sure she knew that.
That's so sweet. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Oh, I love hearing from you because I am so, like I said earlier, I'm so ignorant of culture and music and all that.
Well, music's been my ticket to a lot of places I probably never would have visited or interacted with people, and it's also kept me alive, you know, saved my life more times than my dog has, and in that wisdom and understanding, there's a lot of pain. I'm still working on a lot of trauma stuff from my childhood at 63. I turned this week.
Well, happy birthday.
Happy birthday indeed.
And that's good to hear that because another person in the family of progressives has picked me out of the herd. She heard me talk on the Majority Report and hunted me down on Twitter.
Yeah.
Back to what somebody said earlier, I don't know how to keep up with everything. If you listen to the first hour of Majority Report on Friday, she has Digby on, and she has a very good condensation of the week's news.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you something. No denigration of the Horn because it's not the same time. I find Sam Cedar in the Majority Report among the best, most highbrow stuff that you're going to find.
You're not going to piss me off praising Sam Cedar because I'll jump right in the choir with you too.
Yeah,
you can podcast him too, so you're not conflicting with the Horn at all.
Right. Well, I mean, I actually have YouTube Red, so I don't have to pay a dime other than to YouTube to download his videos whenever I want them, the entire thing. But I think, generally speaking, the stuff that he talks about, and he really gets into stuff. And I frankly love, like, he talked to Digby today, who I think she has a real good insight into politics. And the people he has on there, he typically has experts in any given field. And I won't kid you, some things annoy the hell out of me because I think there's too many people on the left who don't understand an awful lot of things.
Yes.
But for the most part, I just think he has some of the best people talking about issues on there. And he makes fun of the right people. Which I frankly think is, in this day and age, we got to do that.
Anybody ever hear Jimmy Dore? Or Tim Black?
I wish someone would slap Jimmy Dore upside the head. I can't stand the guy.
Somebody sent me a Jimmy Dore clip earlier today, and I responded to them, I simply will not open
anything
with his name on it.
That's the douche nozzle who said that all the Democrats had to do was filibuster any Supreme Court nominee, that there's no way that the Republicans would get rid of the filibuster in the Senate. In fact, it would be more likely for the moon to fall into the ocean. So I have no respect for
Lake
that.
Lake Erie.
Like, was it like, okay, Lake Erie, which is funny. It's such a shallow lake, but I can't stand the guy. And if I ever met him, I would slap him upside the head and spit in his wounds.
Oh.
And if I sound a little violent.
No. Okay. Wait. We gotta, we're going to work on your hillbilly card here, Steve. Instead of saying you would slap anybody or anything like that, you just say, I wouldn't pee in his mouth if his goddamn guts were on fire.
And you know what? Okay, I'm glad to have that, because you know, Bob, you know, I didn't grow up in the southern part of Ohio, but I'm not too far from there, so I'm not going to say I have any hillbilly cred, but I'm not too far away from that, because I do come from small town Ohio.
But back to Sam Cedar for a minute. One of the nice things about Sam is that Sam does not automatically assume that he knows everything. And humilité actually matters. I don't know everything by a long shot. But he will actually reach out if he has a question, and ask about something if he thinks somebody else has a greater degree of knowledge about an issue than he does.
And he has them on his show.
And that's, you know, that's actually refreshing, that mm-hmm. approach.
I thought Sam, when Mike had Malloy had a thing up here in New York when Molly played or sang at Carnegie Hall, they had a little gathering at that place that Tara had initially suggested for you, Bob, when you were here. And Sam was there, and he's just like the neatest kind of most approachable guy. And the nice thing, like you just said, is given what his background is and kind of getting into the, I mean, he takes the access that he seems to have gained to some of the bigger intellects on the left. He takes advantage of that and has them on his program to talk about stuff that you're frankly not going to hear anywhere else. At least that's my impression. I don't know if anybody else who listens to him has that impression, but that's
I can tell you that he's eminently approachable. I've done a bunch of radio rows with him. Malloy's been at some of them too. And you walk up, you go, "Hey, Sam. Hey, Bob. How you doing? Oh, good, Sam. Great." You know, and it's all just, you know, "Hail fellow, well met." You know, old home week. And you know, when he and Malloy talk, it's like watching, I don't know, two pool shooting buddies just, you know, chewing the fat.
Yeah. You know what we need to do? We need to get you on that program, Bob, to talk about the AIC Act and mountaintop removal.
I've done it. I think I've done it once or twice.
Well, we need to get you back on there because you see my tweets about to Ted Lieu on this. I get really, I'll say it, pissed off when I hear the, "Oh, coal ain't coming back."
Well, it's got to be. Yeah, right. It's got to. I did. I saw that the other day and I responded too. Okay, that's great. It's not coming back. Yeah, it's a finite resource. We get that. But it ain't gone.
Exactly. And there's people, and more than not being gone, there's people dying every day because of the poison that those SOBs are putting into
the
environment.
And what kind of surprises me about Ted Lieu is that probably we've got more members of the California delegation on the AIC Act, and there aren't a bunch of them, but we've got a bunch of good California Democrats on the AIC Act over in the House. And why isn't he?
Yeah, I think it has something that I think more has to do with he just doesn't know, because if you know where he represents, right?
No.
Beverly Hills. He represents Beverly Hills.
Swimming pools? Movie stars?
Yeah. And I saw that on the Jim Jefferies show. I don't know if anybody watches Jim Jefferies, who I think is one of the... I don't know. I just freaking love Jim Jefferies.
Oh, he's hilarious. Yeah, I've only seen his stand-ups and stuff. I've never seen the actual show.
Yeah, he has clips on YouTube now and again, although it seems less. But he really takes on. I love it how he takes on some of these crazy nutballs, and he just basically lets them hang themselves and let them look. You know, I find Samantha Bee's that way. Just let them talk and look like the fools that they are.
Well, yeah, that last weekend, I happened to be tuned into Joy Reid. I'll get email. Oh, she's a hack. Insufficiently. But she had on, and I was sitting there scratching my head, she had on that reprehensible turd, Matt Gaetz from Florida. Represents the represents the part of Florida we refer to as the as Lower Alabama.
The super Trump pansy.
Oh yeah, he's nasty, and she, you know, sat there and let him talk his NRA talking points. And on the one hand, I look up and I go, Jesus Christ, you know, there's not enough people on MSNBC to get out all of the of anything resembling a liberal or a progressive message. And you got to give up some of your time for this clown. But then the next day, I'm looking around on the internet and I'm seeing articles, you know, Matt Gaetz eviscerates himself. You know, Matt Gaetz makes an ass out of himself. So maybe there's some value to it. But the thing is, Matt Gaetz's voters aren't going to see that and go, well, my mind is certainly changed by this. I mean, look, it would not be any challenge whatsoever to bring right-wingers on this program day in and day out and debate them. And I have people, gosh, Bob, I wish you had some right-wingers on to fight with. It sure would be fun to hear you fight with the right-wingers. But the thing is, if I'm doing that, then I'm confessing that this program is an entertainment. Now,
yeah,
let's not
turn this into a Tom Hartman show.
Yeah, I hope this program has an element of being entertaining. I mean, we clown around and stuff, but it's not a fucking lounge act.
No, and listen, like you've said a million times, Bob. Listen. The right wingers, they have plenty of places to go to get their shit out. I mean, you have Rush Hemroyd, who's been on the airwaves for God knows what seems like 60 or 70 years, spewing his garbage. You know what? Sometimes you kind of go somewhere you want to. It's like going to a clubhouse where it's folks who generally think how you do, where you can kind of debate the nuances and talk about the nuances. I mean, there's plenty of people who call in on the horn, who talk on the horn that I don't agree with. But we're kind of generally on the same side. We kind of generally put people first as opposed to profits and corporations. We kind of generally, you know.
Well, yeah, I wish the Sparkle Fart powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade hadn't run off. I'd like to continue to have that conversation because hopefully you can have it without screaming at each other. But you can't that with a white winger, okay? You can't do it with the maggots. They're bitter about the election. I'm bitter about the election, but it's also in the past. And the fact of the matter is, and you know, I guess I'm not helping things by referring to them as the Sparkle Fart powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade. Let me be clear. There were two different cavalries, and they both felt that way. And I'll sit here and say a pox on both your houses.
Yeah, well, I consider myself part of that sort of Sparkle Pony brigade because I chat with some of them on the mic, on the X mic Beloit chat group. But the thing is that about Richard Wolff, I understand that he seems like he's pie in the sky. His big thing is to promote workplace worker cooperatives. And he's not under any illusion that the worker cooperative is going to happen anytime soon. He also doesn't believe necessarily that we're going to see any change in income inequality anytime soon. But he would like to see us look in terms of a different kind of a system other than the system that tends to lead us to get ourselves in this kind of condition that we have ourselves in. And, you know, it's like we have so, and And I can understand why somebody might not appreciate Richard Wolff, because he comes off like he knows everything. He's really not that way. But in any case, I don't know how to address Steve's concerns about Richard Wolff being pie in the sky, or Bob, your concern about whether or not you might think that a worker cooperative might work in this society.
Let me just clarify something too. I don't think it's pie in the sky. I generally just think the guy's just wrong.
Okay.
And I don't have any problem with co-ops. I love co-ops. But, you know, what do you make them easier to form? I mean, make it you've got to change attitudes. And let me be clear. I don't necessarily want to get in an airplane that's run by a worker co-op. Okay?
And how do you convert a large company like GE to a worker co-op? What are you willing to and Bob, maybe this is my legal background kicking in.
But I hate it when that happens.
Damn,
that gets in the way, Steve. I know how you feel.
Yeah, it does.
I feel your pain.
I feel your pain.
Yes.
I feel your pain. Right here in my elbow. Oh, I just gotta skinned it up.
Kiss like it, make it better while I'm naked. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, Bob. I just got a flash of a 70-year-old Bill Clinton.
With a skunt elbow.
I just saw the lady from The Shining with Bill Clinton's, you know, in the room 227 with Bill Clinton's face.
Eye bleach.
Yeah, it is eye bleach. By the way, I wanted to ask, how's the chili? I brought that chili out on the porch. How's that chili?
Oh, it's mighty fine. Good and chunky, hot and spicy, just the way I like it.
Yeah. It goes very well with the Irish whiskey, I must say, Steve.
Yeah, well, I had...
Little Jameson's Black Label.
Which reminds me, this is just... I had six shots tonight. This is just totally tangential. If you're in a shot-taking mood, I need you to take one for the team. Well, not for the team, but mostly for me, Steve. One of the places, you know, and I'm still, I can't tell you how bummed out I am that you weren't there while I was there.
Yeah, I am too.
But there's a bar somewhere down on Orchard Street called Katja, K-A-T-J-A.
Okay.
And they specialize in Austrian schnapps. And I need you to just tell me. You can lie to me if need be. It's radio. But I need you to wander in there and just sample two or three and tell me how freaking awesome they are.
Okay, I'll do it this week.
Okay, it's K A T J A. Here, wait a minute.
I think I've actually heard of it, to be honest with you.
And my
office is way downtown. My office is right across from the World Trade Center. So.
And I don't know if you heard me talking about it, but the noodle joint right next door to the hotel where we stayed, Mr. Taka. If you like real fresh homemade, no kidding, ramen, you will lose your mind in there.
I'm not a fan. I apologize, I'm not. But I'll tell you what. Next time you're up here. I had a friend of mine take me to a dumpling place over in, I think it's technically still considered Little Italy, where they make their own dumplings.
Oh.
Yes, it's really freaking good, and you get like a bowl of maybe 10 to 12 dumplings for like $2, and they actually make them there. And they freeze them there, and you can buy a bag of their dumplings. So
yeah, for everything being about how expensive New York is, I found some stunningly good food for nothing.
You got to know where to go.
Down Orchard, two blocks from where we are, where Orchard Street Hotel, down two blocks and turn left and go a block. There's a Dominican place called El Castillo.
Okay.
With the most amazing breakfast I have eaten in a very long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a go ahead. I'm sorry.
Queso frito, griddle seared thick slices of salami, eggs however you want them,
mm-hmm.
over a great big mound of plantains.
Yeah, and it's a ton of food. But there's it's funny you say that because up near where I am, in the Washington Heights, I live up the one train. So Washington Heights, maybe around 207th Street. It's the end of the A train. It's a completely Dominican area. I don't know if I told you the story about seeing there's a Dominican cigar smoking place where you go there and all the guys are Dominican. And I saw Jose Rio in there. I don't know if you remember Jose Rio.
Oh, very much, yes.
Yeah, I saw, I had a picture on the wall and I walked by and I was looking at the picture and there was a guy sitting out on the sidewalk. He says, that's him right there. He's sitting on the sidewalk. Super nice guy. I'm going to tell you what, you're not going to meet a much nicer group than Dominican. I have had nothing but all the Dominicans I've ever run into or had dealings with have been freaking fabulous to me. I remember one year I lost my job and there was a Dominican. I used to live in East Harlem. There was a Dominican little store, called Bodega, although I don't like the term. And the guy walked in one day and the guy said, just take whatever you need and worry about paying me later. There's some great restaurants up there. There was a whole mess of really good beer places up around 215th Street and Broadway, again, off the one train.
Oh, and the German joint where we wound up having the horn in,
mm-hmm.
Just a few blocks down from the hotel, too.
Excellent.
Beautiful, beautiful array of really good German beers and some pretty damn good German food.
Cool. And I'm glad you got to the Esse Bagel, because that's to me, that's New York bagels.
Well, I'm gonna withhold judgment until I've had one from Russ and Daughters.
Okay. Which one did you go to? Did you go to the one on 51st in Lexington, or Third, or did you go to the one over in the East Village on First Avenue and like 15th?
I am thinking it's the newer one, if that makes any sense. I still don't know my New York geography all that well.
Which train did you take to get there?
A cab.
Okay.
You see, but I could still see the Chrysler Building north of me. So,
okay, then yeah, you were at the one on 3rd and maybe 50th Street.
Yeah. But that was, oh no, that was a magnificent bagel. And my everything bagel had just come out of
freaking
the
awesome,
oven.
Isn't it? They come right, they come out and then they boil them. So they boil them and they bake them.
Yeah, they're boiled and then they put them in the oven. Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh no,
they come right out of there and they're still hot.
It was astonishing. And I had a 5 chili pepper cream cheese, just quit it. By the way, Katya, that place with the schnapps, is at 79 Orchard.
Okay, I'll have to check it out because that's probably down pretty. Is that Chinatown?
I think it's still east of Chinatown.
Okay, so it's probably on the border between Chinatown and the Lower East Side.
Yeah. I mean, Orchard Street's Lower East Side, so
mm-hmm.
Okay. But I looked at their. Well, here, let me just call it up. We're running out of time. We'll run over by a couple of minutes just for the hell of it. But let me see here.
And I'm sorry to hog. I apologize.
Oh, no. You're not hogging at all. You haven't been on in a while. So let's see the drinks menu. No, I don't want your beers. Although the beers are, I wouldn't. Let's see. On draft, their beers, Stiegel, a lager, Spaten, Oktoberfest, Mars, a Zwickel, Radeberger, a Pilsner, and Franziskaner, a Hefeweizen. They had my mm-hmm. They had my Goffel on tap at Lorelei, though, so, that just got all over me. Okay, schnapps, there it is. Just listen to this. This is liquor porn, by the way. oh, damn it. Where'd you go? Okay, drinks. All right, there we're there. Schnapps. Ah, here we go. Wildkirschen, wild cherry. Himbeer, raspberry. Fogelbeer, rowanberry. Ingwer, ginger. Marillen, apricot. Pear Williams. Christ almighty, they have carrot schnapps, Steve, okay?
Oh, my God.
Schwetschke, plum. Old apple. Like two or three different kinds of, and then of course Kirschwasser. They've got grappa, walnut liqueur, apricot liqueur,
really
pear liqueur, creme de violette, violet. And I know you've got your you've got your German. So, and then Gilke Kaiser caraway liqueur. Yeah, see, I hurt you with that one, didn't I?
Ooh, damn. Ooh. I have to ask you one last question.
Yes?
Has everyone here had the liqueur chartreuse?
Oh, yeah.
Did I ever tell you? You know, I know that I have a good friend of mine who was a Carthusian monk at the Grand Chartreuse Monastery in France for 7 years, and he was the chief distiller.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And the sensei.
Well,
quite an interesting fella.
Well, I'm looking forward to, this is really the first time I had a chance to wander around and get to know, you know, even vaguely any portion of the, and you know, Ferg had his New York debut doing karaoke in New York. I have not uploaded that because I don't have his permission. But it wasn't just his New York debut doing karaoke. It was his New York debut doing Johnny Cash karaoke in New York.
Oh. Excellent.
Walk the line.
Yeah, I'm willing to bet that in a city of however many millions, that was probably the only Johnny Cash karaoke being done in the city that night.
Karaoke maybe, but you know.
No, there were bands doing Johnny Cash, I'm sure, but Johnny Cash karaoke, I don't know. I like to think of it that way, though.
Well, I hope you get up here sometime again soon, Bob, because I will take you to some places that you just don't know.
So, is that mid-February thing a thing you do every year?
No. Here's what happened. My partner and I, and I won't get into the reasons, we were at a point where we were only seeing each other once a year. Around Christmas time. And I said, you know what? Fuck that shit. Excuse my French. And I made the commitment to go at least every other month to Ottawa to see him. And that's why.
Okay. Okay. Well, it was a magnificent trip. Had a blast. Didn't get the measles. Even though the Jehovah's Witness brought the measles to New York the same time we were there. Getting to see those 1,000-year-old manuscripts, Jesus God, I'm still just mind blown by it. You know, you read all your life about, you know, the illuminated manuscripts of the Middle Ages, and then you look down, and the colors are so fucking vivid. They're so
and they're
bright.
Real vivid, yeah.
Yeah, and the gold is gold.
Are those the Kells that you saw?
No. These were mainly books of days.
Okay. Okay, yeah, because the Kells are in Ireland, aren't they? Yeah, Dublin, I think.
Yeah, these were all books that were bought by. What's his name? Morgan. You know, with all of his wealth, decided he wanted to collect Europe. And
JP.
This was JP's dad.
Oh yes. Okay. Okay.
If I'm not mistaken, and he did a pretty passing fair job of it. Well, listen, everybody, I got to get out of here. We've got to get out of here. I am thrilled to pieces to announce that we got all the way down to only $69 to go to finish the week. That being the case, I thank everybody who jumped in. Thank you so very much. Thank you, Steve, for getting it started. Thank you, Steve. We had challenge action by the Fraternity of Steve tonight. Thank you to everyone who responded. I don't mean to jump up on the cross, but just being able to keep up with the fundraising for the program makes the program, I can't tell you how much easier to do, because that means I'm not sitting here sweating and worrying about, you know, what bill am I going to, you know, where you put all the bills in a hat and you draw out, you know, three and there's still four more in there. When we keep up with fundraising, it really, really matters. So I thank you all very, very kindly. And
I just like to say thank you to Clarity and Larry. I hope you didn't take my criticism of Professor Wolf. And I hope you took it in the light it was intended. And I just want to say I love being here with Larry. Good to hear Larry again, and Clarity, who's one of my favorites. And Steve Georgistan, if you're still on, one of my favorites. Rick, one of my favorites. And Bob, just y'all are just a really, really good group of people, and I love being associated with you. I just want to say that.
Thank you,
right,
Steve.
Back at you, man.
Thanks, Steve. Back at you, bro.
That's really kind and really warm and generous in spirit. Thank you, Steve.
Did someone say John Cash?
Yeah. I did.
Yeah. Well, do you have the time to listen to me whine?
I think somebody has a 69 special here on for the weekend, Bob. I think it's going to be met, the $69 that are left somehow.
Yeah, I think so too.
I thank you. I hope so. And you all have a wonderful evening. And I've got a very, very busy, kind of stressy little weekend ahead of me. So if I'm a total mess on Monday, please forgive me in advance. Or maybe as is so often the case, these 3 hours actually turn out to be my therapy. And for that, I thank you as well. Everybody, have a great weekend. Thanks always to Sparky for hosting and moderating the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. And thanks for moderating in the chat room as well. Thanks go out to Pinch Hit Midweek Utility, chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa for HeadOn.live. Thank you very kindly to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Remember, when you shop at Amazon, go to smile.amazon.com, nominate Coal River Mountain Watch as the beneficiary of your proceeds, and a small part of your purchase price every time when you go to smile.amazon.com will go to fund the human rights, human dignity struggle in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone of West Virginia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.